Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
Bomb my papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Weekday mornings, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 o'clock with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by our good friend Dan Feinberg. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always a blast to talk with Dan. Lots of TV news and lots of TV to talk about right here on 720 WGN. And speaking of TV, after we're done with our visit with Dan, I found an article that has some of the worst TV shows of the 70s. Maybe some people remember them. I certainly looked at this thing and I remembered a few of them, but man, there was some bad TV in the 70s. Some really bad TV in the 70s, and we'll talk about that. And some sweet summer treats that we want to bring back, and much more. Again, Triple Play Thursday. Get the requests in at 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Get in there and follow us there and like us on Facebook. All right. It is Thursday morning. Let's say hello to my great producer, Tom Hodge. How are you, Tom?
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all.
Cubs took the second game.
Nice little split.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah. And they shelled the pitcher, who had won, what, 9 straight at that point, had the lowest ERA in the majors, and the Cubs shelled him. I mean, almost single-handedly, Wilson Contreras.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
He was on fire tonight.
5 RBIs, grand slam, another home run.
Can't ask for much more, really.
You know? Everybody thought it was going to be a pitcher's duel. Everybody thought it was going to be a real low-scoring game. You know? The night before, they played against the pitcher with the highest ERA, one of the highest ERAs in the majors, and they scored one run. It's like, what? So, anyway, that was fun. Now they got the Mets coming in.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's supposed to rain like 2 of the 3 days that the Mets are in town, so we'll see what happens. They did get the game in last night, though.
They did. Yeah. I was happy. I mean, when I woke up and looked at the forecast again, I was like, I don't know.
It's ridiculous. This weather's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's raining right... I'm looking outside right now. It's raining right now.
Yeah. I just need it to be done.
Absurd. I don't mind the temperature, I got to say. I know everybody's complaining because it's June 20th and it's 55 degrees outside. I'd rather have that than 95.
Mm-hmm. You and I have a proclivity for the colder temperatures.
Yes.
Not.
What is that noise?
Sorry, my text tone is... you know, Lord of the Rings when Gandalf falls down? It's literally just a sound clip of Elijah Wood screaming.
It's just him screaming when Gandalf falls?
Yeah, it's just, no!
Oh,
you know, that's
okay.
It.
So somebody's texting you? That's
what that was? Yeah. I texted it just now.
It's like, Tom, shut up.
All right. That's interesting. And in the newsroom, it's
that's hilarious.
It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, Nick.
How are you? I was like, what the hell is that?
That was hilarious.
Sorry.
I'm glad you spoke to it, though, because I was wondering the same thing. I'm good. Honestly, I'm a little, my legs feel like they're empty. I'm running on fumes.
Yeah?
I did a neighborhood news segment today. I thought it was going to be just a quick hour, you know, reporting job, so I broke my sleep pattern up right in the middle of my sleep. I went home yesterday, I got a little nap, 2 hours, and I went back out. Ended up being a story with the Chicago Architecture Center, so I had to take the 2 hour walking tour.
Oh, wow.
So it was a long day, but it was really cool, too.
Well, that's a beautiful tour.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I saw about four or five things on buildings that I pass every day, and I had never seen these things before, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, that's the architecture in this city is just amazing, and they have so many really good architecture tours, you know?
It is, man. It's a playground for people who love architecture,
that's for sure. It's a beautiful city. Yeah. We live in a beautiful city. And it's weird, too, because like you said, you know, we walk around downtown, and we don't even, you know, we worked in the Tribune building for, you know, what 25 years or something like that. We worked in the Tribune building, and that's one of the most beautiful buildings in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like people standing in front of it, looking at it and taking pictures. And I'm like, get the hell out of the way. I got to get into work. And then I, you know, every once in a while you got to just stop and go, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a really, we're lucky to be working in this building.
And that was one of the buildings that they highlighted on this particular tour.
Yeah. Well, you got to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to.
Did they highlight the fact that soon you can live in the Tribune
Tower?
Yeah,
they brought it up. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. They said that the company plans on building a very high skyscraper behind it, but, you know, it hasn't been approved yet. But, yeah, that's the plan.
That's so weird.
Yeah. That's going to look strange.
It is going to look weird.
My concern is if you can't see the Tribune Tower because of this new tower, if you're, you know, on the lake shore and you're looking west and you can't, can no longer see the Tribune Tower, that is a problem.
Yeah.
That should be visible, I think, from that side.
Yeah. Well, it was fun working in that building. Yeah.
It was
really fun working in that building, and I hope they don't do anything to the lobby. They can't do anything to that lobby.
I cannot imagine. Because it's filled with quotes from some of the greatest people in history.
Well, it's one of the most beautiful lobbies of a building I've ever been to.
And map?
Yeah.
The big map? Oh.
It was just a joy to walk into that building. And just every time you walk in, you look at that lobby and you're like, man, this is unbelievable. So they can't do anything to that lobby. I will be not happy. So I love this building, though.
No, it's a great building.
And I love us here at 303 Wacker. It's a very cool building, and the studios are great, and I have an office, which, you know.
It's a very cool office, too.
It's a very cool office.
Got all the sweet memorabilia and photos.
The coolest office here, I think.
I got the craziest stuff in my office, man. And now I've got a frog that was used in the movie Magnolia in my office. An actual prop frog from the movie Magnolia, thanks to listener Deanna. Yeah, I got bobbleheads in there. I got my recent award.
Yes.
Is in there. All kinds of cool
stuff. The obelisk of excellence.
Yes. So, anyway, so it is Thursday. Triple Play Thursday, guys. Get your requests in now. You know how it works. It's one artist, three songs. Get them in at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So, there you go. So, Vic, you missed the Cub game then? Cubs and Sox?
Yes. Yeah, I slept right up until I had to get up.
Until you got up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It was a fun game.
And I'm really upset about that because it's kind of cool to see both clubs on the same field. You know, I miss both
games. Well, you get to see it on they're back on the south side in July.
Yep. So the series is split now. We'll see how that one goes.
It's split now. Two more games, and July 6th and 7th. So they're going to be playing on my birthday.
Ooh, July 6th. I will be able to watch that one. Yep. Yeah.
So
nice.
All right, let's break here. Dan Feinberg is going to join us for his biweekly visit with us. Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. We got a lot of TV to talk about, and we're going to do that right after we take this break.
TV party tonight. We're going to have a TV party tonight. All right. We're going to have a TV party. All right. Tonight. Saturday Night Live. Jefferson! Bang it! I would
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday, everybody. So get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're about to talk with our buddy Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can check him out at, you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about, including the TV Critic Award nominations have been announced, and we want to get to that and more. And coming up a little bit later on, we're going to jump into the worst TV shows of the 70s, and there were a lot. So we'll have some conversation about that. And also some summer treats that we should bring back. So that's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you feeling, Nick?
I'm feeling better than over the weekend.
you can still hear a bit of it, as I'm sure you know.
It was not. I had to take a couple of mornings off. It was not a pleasant weekend. That's all I'm saying. But I'm feeling better now, though. I'm on the mend for sure.
Okay, that is good to hear.
Good. Welcome back to the show. We've got a lot of TV to
Thank
talk
you.
About here. Everybody can read you at The Hollywood Reporter. Follow you at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, on Twitter and Facebook. Why don't we start with the? Alternatino. With Arturo Castro.
Easy for you to say that.
Yeah. How many episodes have you seen?
I have seen 7 or 8 episodes. I've forgotten. They, at a certain point, kind of blended together, which is either the good side or the bad side of a sketch show. People will probably know Arturo Castro from either Broad City, where he played the flamboyant roommate Jaime,
yeah.
Or from his rather chilling and terrifying performance in either the second or third season of Narcos. I've kind of lost track on individual seasons.
Yeah.
And this is basically Comedy Central giving him his own Key and Peele, Inside Amy Schumer, Dave Chappelle Show, et cetera, et cetera. It's honestly, I would describe it as so-so. If you like Arturo Castro, you'll probably feel as if he's better than this, and that he's better than the material. As I said in my review, I really appreciated his versatility and his range before, and I don't not appreciate it now after watching 7 or 8 episodes, but I'm not any more impressed. And I think given the sheer number of characters he plays, I think in the neighborhood of 40-ish over the first season, I think probably I should have come away a little bit more impressed given whatever. So it's okay. It is a different perspective. Heaven knows a Latinx sketch comedy show is well and truly overdue, and it is a perspective that has not been overwhelmingly seen on television, and therefore bless Comedy Central for giving him this vehicle. I wish it were better. I wish it went further. I wish it weren't so sort of one note in most of its jokes. So, maybe a second season will allow them to actually let loose. This does not feel like anyone letting loose, unfortunately.
I just saw the premiere, the first episode that premiered the other night, and I'm with you. There are moments, and I think he's really funny. I loved him on Broad City. I just thought he was great on Broad City. I did not watch Narcos, but I understand his obviously the performances are completely different, but I thought he was so funny on Broad City, and I thought the idea of this show is fresh and from, like you said, a different point of view that doesn't get represented very often, and I wanted to see him do more, but I too was kind of underwhelmed by it, and obviously I'll give it another chance and I'll watch it a couple more times because he's a funny guy and he's very talented, but I was not. Overly pleased with the premiere.
I guess I just wanted every joke to go a step further. I feel like every one of the sketches is like, okay, here's premise, here's what's funny, okay, on to the next sketch.
Yeah.
And every single case I wanted, okay, but what's the next step to it? What's the twist you're putting on that's going to make me go from ha ha to actually laughing hard out loud? And I don't know that any of the sketches in the 7 or 8 episodes I watched went beyond, okay, that's a funny premise, what you're going to do with it,
yeah,
to the next thing, in the way that, you know, Key and Peele, and the show's showrunner is a Key and Peele veteran.
Yeah.
Key and Peele sketches, they go from, okay, here's why it's funny, to, okay, here's why it's crazy, to, oh my goodness,
yeah,
we've just gone utterly insane every time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this just isn't that.
No, it's not. And it is, I think it's unfair to compare the two, but you can't help it. I mean, Comedy Central's got a pretty good track record for sketch comedy shows, like a really good track record for sketch comedy shows, and so I guess the bar was raised pretty high for this, because, you know, I loved him so much on Broad City, and you know, he's got a team of writers that, you know, that obviously, like you said, have worked like in the past with other really great people, but you know, to compare this to something like Key and Peele, which for my money is one of the funniest sketch shows that's ever been on television. And for that very reason that you were talking about, Dan, they would take those sketches and they would go to, I mean, that, the first one that always pops into my head when I think about where it goes and how crazy it goes, because all of them do, but is the Family Ties sketch, where it's the Family Ties sketch where Reginald L. Johnson comes in and screams at the producer, and then it ends with Urkel coming in and being, you know, it goes into horror. And that's the kind of stuff that Key and Peele did so brilliantly, that this lacks.
Family Matters, incidentally.
What did I say? Family Ties?
Temporarily confused.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, okay. Family Matters. The Urkel Show. Whatever the Urkel Show was.
No. I totally knew this. What you mean, and that is a great example of a sketch where it's funny in 3 or 4 different ways, and then it goes a way you totally don't anticipate. And you know, I feel like the best of the Amy Schumer sketches do that. Certainly, the best of the Dave Chappelle sketches do that.
Yeah.
And every one of these just felt like it was too short. And the structure of the sort of 4 or 5 part ongoing joke thing around which the little smaller things are structured, it just doesn't really work. In no case in the episodes that I saw did the extended joke that runs through the whole episode actually pay off in anything that I thought was appreciably meaningful. I understand why they would have thought they wanted to try it. Again, he's extremely talented. He's really good. I'd love to see, you know, if there were shackles for whatever reason. I don't know what shackles there would have been, because, as we've already said, Comedy Central does this well. So I would like to see a little bit less contained humor and more sort of free range humor, I think. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will. It's you know, it's 22 minutes long, so I'll watch it. And I'm sure that there will be, you know, some laughs in it, because the guy's very, very funny. So,
there are laughs. Honestly, there are totally laughs. And if you don't know him from his other stuff, if you don't know Broad City, if you don't know Narcos, this shows you to some degree why people think he's a comic with a lot of potential.
Yeah.
I wanted something more, but that might just be on me.
Okay. All right. Hang on here to Comedy Central for a second. Are you watching Klepper?
I have not been. Has it been good?
By far the best thing he's done. By far the best use of that guy. He's not playing the Klepper, you know, Colbert like character. He's just being himself, and they're putting him out in the world and covering some very important topics with some really interesting people. I think it is easily the best Jordan Klepper show, because I did not like I don't remember The Opposition pretty much at all, and I thought he was good in small doses on The Daily Show, but this is by far the best use of this guy.
I need to find the time to watch it, because as we might mention once or twice, a lot of TV out there.
Yeah, there is. By the way, Baskets came back since we've last spoke. And it didn't take very long to get to the Baskets thing. I thought the episode was great and very funny. And again, I just think it's going to be a wonderful season. It's a terrific show on so many levels. And again, Louis Anderson, you know, amazing.
I thought it was a fine premiere, not necessarily absolute top tier Baskets, but they had to work us back into where the story was going at the end of last season. So right. I'm looking forward to more.
Have they sent you screeners, or are you ahead on us?
No, I am. I've only seen the premiere. I just couldn't get to it last week. There were too many things I was reviewing, and so I sort of had those screeners in my email, at the top of my email, gonna get to him, and then just didn't, unfortunately. Story of my TV life these days.
All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk about TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And lots more TV to talk about, including there was an Emmy discussion that the TV critics had in The Hollywood Reporter. And also, the TV Critic Award nominations have been announced, and we got to go through that. So much more to talk about with Dan Feinberg, and we'll jump back into it after the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. To extend our TV talk, I've got an article featuring the worst TV shows of the 70s, some of which I remember, some of which I don't, all of which sound horrendous. So we'll jump into that, and we're going to talk about some summer treats that we want to bring back. Right now, though, we're going to jump back into our conversation. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and lots of TV to talk about with Dan, including the nominations for the TCA this year. So let's get Dan back here. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, I did not know. Where have I been that Fred Armisen has a new show on HBO. How did I miss out on that and learn about it from you?
I mean, surely part of that is because that's part of my job.
Yeah, but being the Fred Armisen maniac that I am, and lover of horror comedy, I should be all over this thing.
Well, and I think the latter is probably more of a reason why you should have been all over this thing. I think that Fred Armisen is sort of, I don't think he's exactly downplaying his role in this, but I think he's attempting to put the other creators of Los Spookies forward. So he co-created the show, and which is tremendously fun to say, Los Spookies, with Ana Fábrega and Julio Torres. Julio Torres has written for SNL. Ana Fábrega, she has been multiple times on the Amy Sedaris Home Improvement parody show, she's vaguely familiar. And so Fred Armisen co-created it and has a guest starring role, but I do think that HBO and that the show have attempted to put the other creators and producers forward more as the centerpieces of the show. So I think they may have done a disservice in appropriately letting Fred Armisen fanatics know, but I think that they've been intentionally. Also, it's a show that they sort of are treating as kind of a cult item, which I think is probably completely and totally appropriate. But, it airs on Friday nights at 11 o'clock, I think. So, they're not hiding it, but they're saying you have to discover it and then you're going to have fun discovering it.
Yeah.
So I think that's how they're approaching it.
And what is it? What is it, an episodic thing?
It is an episodic thing. The premise is it's primarily set in a unnamed Latin American country that's probably a little bit like Mexico, but definitely not named as Mexico. And so there's a group of friends, and they all have an interest in a horror. And they do a amusing horror-themed quinceañera, and it opens the door for them to be the sort of go-to horror producers in certain familiar genre circumstances. So the first episode, they have to stage an exorcism because the local priest is insecure that a new, more attractive priest is becoming more popular than him. So they stage an exorcism. In a later episode, they do an inheritance prank. So basically one of those five strangers have to spend the night in a haunted house, and the winner gets to keep the estate, and they have to stage the haunted house of it. So they sort of find themselves doing this, but the show also to some degree exists in a world in which there are supernatural elements that are a part of it, and so it's not just kind of a meta examination of people doing horror pranks. And then meanwhile you have Fred Armisen as one of the main characters' cousins, who is a legendary valet for movie stars in Los Angeles. And it is incredibly droll and dry and laconic, and also extremely funny in places. It's tightly written. The stars are rather masterful in how they handle the deadpan stuff, especially the two co-creators who are also co-stars. It is, as we say many times about many shows, it is not going to be for everyone. It is absolutely going to be for you.
Now, did it premiere already last Friday, or does it premiere this Friday?
It premiered last Friday.
Oh, okay.
It's six episodes. I've seen all six. It goes some very amusing places. And honestly, in my review, I compared it to Baskets and What We Do in the Shadows. So, I mean...
Yeah,
could I be talking to someone who is more likely to be a fan of this show?
I don't think so. This was like tailor made for me. So the first episode is available. I can just get it on my on demand, and then it'll be back on Friday.
You can indeed. Also, as a small asterisk, it is largely in Spanish, which is just part of the amusement of the show, especially because most of the creators were born in the United States and speak English as their primary language. So that's sort of part of the underlying humor of the show. Not that they don't speak Spanish, but they've kind of tailored their approach to Spanish to be a particular, somewhat not exaggerated again, but they've made choices. It is not a colloquial Spanish. It's really just a lot of fun. And it is sometimes laugh out loud hilarious. It's got a little bit of poignancy, and lots of people will not find it the least bit funny.
Okay,
and that's totally fine.
All right, well there we go. I'm definitely going to check that out. I happen to be a big fan of Carla Gugino, and always have been, and she's got a new show on Cinemax called Jet. Tell us about that one.
She does indeed, and once again, if you are a fan of Carla Gugino, this is a really one of her better roles in years. And you know, she was very good in Haunting of Hill House just last year, so it's not like the world is necessarily doing poorly by Carla Gugino. She has worked steadily for multiple decades and worked often very well, but for some of us, we felt as if she kind of had her best role/opportunity with the short-lived ABC drama Karen Sisko back in the day, mm-hmm. which was an Elmore Leonard adaptation, and it really just gave her this great opportunity to play a tough-talking badass, basically. And for whatever reason, mostly that Hollywood just doesn't do enough of that with female leads just in general, she hasn't had exactly comparable opportunities. This is not a direct Elmore Leonard adaptation, but it is very, very, very consciously attempting to be Elmore Leonard-esque. It's created by Sebastian Gutierrez, who is Carla Gugino's partner. They are not married, but they have been together for many a moon. And his background includes writing one episode of Karen Sisko. He also wrote the not all that great, but sometimes interesting Elmore Leonard adaptation, The Big Bounce. And he's just got a solid sense of Elmore Leonard. He's got a great sense of what Carla Gugino is good at. And the premise of the show is that she plays an ex-thief, master thief, nicknamed Jeff. And recently out of prison, trying to keep her nose clean, but she gets pulled in by a crime boss played by Giancarlo Esposito to do one last job. Naturally, the job goes badly, and it leads to more heists slash shootouts slash whatever. And it's, you know, it's pulpy, and it's sexy, it's stylish. It's not necessarily perfect because, for whatever reason, it doesn't have kind of the terseness that is one of the great things about Elmore Leonard. Is Elmore Leonard doesn't waste words. He doesn't waste time. And there's some wasted time in this. You know, episodes run a full hour, in some cases slightly longer. I would say each one of them probably could have been trimmed by 10 to 15 minutes easy. But it's just such a good role for her, and Giancarlo Esposito is fun. A lot of the supporting actors are very good. You know, you've got your verbose henchmen, you've got your various crime lords, et cetera, et cetera. It's a pretty solid show. It's the kind of thing that Cinemax has been doing a fair amount of in recent years, and no one has particularly noticed, as they do these kind of genre B-movie exercise kind of shows. And so they had Warrior that came out earlier this year that was kind of a martial arts Western pastiche. They had Quarry a couple years ago, which was a show that I loved, which was just a really good Southern Gothic crime thriller, Vietnam era. Mm-hmm. And they commit to the kind of pseudo exploitation side of these things. Banshee would be another good example. And a lot of these shows just really don't pop up on the mainstream radar at all. And people just don't think of Cinemax as a place to go to get quality shows, but this is a solid, decent B movie of a television show, and I mean that totally complimentarily. It is not going to win Emmys. On the other hand, it's entertaining, muscular, and a great role for Carla Gugino.
Well, great. That sounds great to me. And I was a huge fan of Karen Sisko. I thought that show was terrific
because it's a great show, yeah. And a show that I do not understand why it failed. It was simply the wrong show at the wrong time. And as I always say, there's an alternate world in which that show ran 5 or 6 years, was a big hit, where she got nominated for multiple Emmys for it, because she totally could have, because she was absolutely good enough, and where it just cemented her image in the popular consciousness and blah, blah, blah. Instead, that didn't happen. It was canceled after a half season.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's Jet, and it's on Cinemax. Has it aired already? Has it premiered?
It premiered last Friday. Also, see Friday. Lots of
Friday.
Good TV on
all
Friday.
There we go.
You just have to know what to look for.
Okay, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are talking TV as we do every couple of weeks. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. More TV talk coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requested now. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is currently my guest. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, let's bring Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Now, I know that you're not reviewing it, but have you watched Perpetual Grace Limited yet?
I have watched only the first episode thus far. I know it features one of your future wives, or future ex-wives.
My future ex-wife, Dana, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, yes.
Now, are you enjoying it, or are you just enjoying your future ex-wife?
No, I love it. I love it. I think it's nuts and weird, and I've always been a fan of the very strangeness of Stephen Conrad's work, because he's a very unique voice and a bit crazy, and I like that. The cast is unbelievable. And I'm three episodes in. I'm all caught up on the three episodes, and I'm really loving it. Wholly original, really weird, and again the acting is just superb. The Jimmy Simpson and this kid, I don't know where they found this kid who You've seen the first episode then, Dan? So you saw
I've seen the episode, and the kid you're referring to is one of the main characters' best friends on Fresh Off the Boat. So,
the kid who gets bopped on the head with the pipe by Jimmy Simpson,
indeed.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable, and he gets even better. You've only seen the first episode, right, Dan?
I have thus far chosen to only watch the one episode because I admire the esoteric contrivances of Stephen Conrad's voice more than I probably embrace them.
Oh,
would be what I
see.
I would say.
Okay, all right. Okay, I just think, you got Ben Kingsley, Jackie Weaver. I mean, this is a cast and a half, and they're all so good. And Louis Guzman, there's the last episode involving Louis Guzman and Ben Kingsley was just a joy to watch those two guys. And I've always been a fan of Jimmy Simpson big time, and I think he's doing amazing work here. And it's just really funny and really weird, and I laugh out loud while I watch it, and I feel that way about a lot of Conrad's work and his voice, you know. I thought The Weatherman was hilarious and weird, and I really like the way he writes. I like the way he directs. He did a film called The Promotion with John C. Reilly and Sean William Scott, shot right here in Chicago. He's from Chicago. Which I just love, and it's weird and funny. I just think he's got a great, unique voice, and I'm really digging this show a lot.
Sounds like you probably need to be watching Patriot on Amazon.
Oh,
Tim Goodman, always champions.
Yeah, no, I've watched it. Yeah, I mean,
okay, you've watched all of it.
Oh, yeah. And a very good friend of mine is in it, Tony Fitzpatrick, the great. He's a very good friend of mine, and also, you know, Conrad uses a lot of the same people over and over again. Like Kurtwood Smith is in, is in Perpetual Grace, and a great Terry O'Quinn. Like, he shows up in the second episode and just it's just all these character actors who come in and just have smaller roles are fantastic. I'm all over this show. I just think it's great.
I need to watch more, no question.
Okay. All right. Showtime, The Loudest Voice. Russell Crowe has got some makeup on in this.
Oh, so much makeup.
Tell everybody about this one. I've been reading about this one. Curious about it.
This is The Loudest Voice, which is based on Gabriel Sherman's book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, and his reporting for New York Magazine, etc. And it's about Roger Ailes and Roger Ailes' particular rise and fall within the Fox News empire. Fox News obviously has not itself had a fall, so it's really Roger Ailes' fall, and it basically tells Roger Ailes' story from the moment in 1995 when he was fired by NBC and NBC News and looked like he might be unhirable. And he basically worked out an exit package where the non-compete said that he could not go to any existing news station, and he cackled and signed it and then went to Rupert Murdoch, and they launched Fox News, changing the way we view news and American politics forever, et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of half the Roger Ailes is somewhat evil, but also brilliant and manipulative and unquestionably a media mastermind who saw a gap in the marketplace and created a behemoth. I mean, there is no question that the miniseries is admiring of the empire he crafted. At the same time, it treats Roger Ailes as a gigantic bigot, misogynist, sexual abuser. I believe in my review I said that it felt a lot like a Jabba the Hutt origin story at certain points. which, let me assure you, the amount of latex that is bedecking Russell Crowe in this only adds to the Jabba the Huttiness of it. It's got a very, very good cast that's largely unused or also coated in large amounts of latex. So you have Sienna Miller, who's completely unrecognizable as Roger Ailes' wife, Beth. And I think part of that is that her makeup is more aggressive. Like, you always look at Russell Crowe and you go, yep, that's Russell Crowe in impressive fat makeup. Whereas you lose that it's Sienna Miller playing his wife almost immediately. And I think there is some performance in that. So kudos to her. You have Naomi Watts as Gretchen Carlson, and then you have just a bunch of other people popping up as variably familiar and unfamiliar Fox News percentages. So you have someone playing Glenn Beck, you have someone playing Sean Hannity, someone playing Combs, et cetera. And sometimes it's very interesting, and sometimes you feel as if there are interesting granular details that you're getting that you appreciate. As I was watching it, I spent a lot of time pondering how much time is being spent by left-leaning storytellers on putting famous actors in large amounts of latex to do these wax museum pieces about conservative figures that will play only to left-leaning audiences who cackle and go, ha ha ha, that's what I thought. And I wonder what the purpose of it all is. And, you know, I felt this way watching Veep a lot, Vice, sorry, right. You know, where there's some combination of latex and Christian Bale gaining large amounts of weight because Christian Bale's a crazy person.
I actually actively hate that movie. I hate that movie. I hated it, every frame of it.
This is not that. So
okay,
it's not that. It is pretty much a straightforward drama. Whereas, you know, obviously Adam McKay likes to think he's doing, rich political satire.
And that's a great way of putting it.
With you that in Veep he did not. And why do I keep calling it Veep? In Vice, did not.
Yeah.
Aren't it four words starts with V?
There were things about The Big Short that bugged me, but overall I liked it. All of the things that bugged me about The Big Short are everything in Vice times 1,000.
I think I am prone to agree. My feeling is that Big Short required some of the explanation. Adam McKay felt it did, whereas in Vice it did not. This is sort of partially in between. I think a lot of the things that Tom McCarthy is one of the creators, and it's a decent assortment of cable director, cable prestige directors.
Right.
Gary Skoglund directed the first couple episodes. Other various familiar people, if you've watched your HBO and Showtime dramas pop up and direct it, it all looks very good. I just kept wanting something a little bit more, and I just feel like a lot of these are fairly hollow in terms of their investigation of politics, and I just don't know what is necessarily being gained intellectually from any of it. And it's a lot of preaching to the choir, a lot of liberals patting themselves on the back for having recognized things were being manipulative and manipulating. Everyone's going to go, ha, I knew that was the way Fox News viewed its audience, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what the takeaway is going to be that's actually insightful. And I've seen 4 of the 7 episodes of this. I'm very curious to see the other 3. It could turn out that it goes someplace interesting. It's a story without a hero, which makes it kind of hard to latch onto. It's really a story about this repulsive figure who's also brilliant, but it doesn't treat him really in a Shakespearean way. So this is not like Succession, which really does take its main character in Shakespearean King Lear kind of ways to go back to something better that Adam McKay did. It's interesting. I don't know that it's all that great, but definitely Russell Crowe is fully engaged with wearing a large amount of makeup and being fat.
Is each episode an hour?
Each episode is variable. I think some of them might go as quote unquote short as 48 or 49 minutes, but it's roughly an hour. And each episode basically follows a year. So one episode is, the first episode is kind of the firing by NBC and then the launching at Fox News. There's a pretty tense episode that's built around 9/11 and then how Fox News responded to that. Mm. There are later episodes that sort of position when Fox News, when and how and why Fox News decided to go to war with Obama. And, you know, it sort of positions the nascent Trump influence within influence on Trump, et cetera. So there's some of that. I wanted to be more interested in it than I was, but I'm still definitely curious about the last three.
All right. That's the loudest voice on Showtime. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
There you go. Dan Feinberg is with us. We got to take a break for the news. When we come back, we're going to dive right in to the nominations for the TV Critics Awards. The nominations were announced, and we're going to get into it and talk all about them right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking TV right now, and we're going to continue to talk TV, because I have an article that's pretty ridiculous and hilarious about some of the worst TV shows of the 70s. That ever existed. So we'll jump into that. And again, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Joining us right now, Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every 2 weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Tell us about the TV Critic Award nominations for this. How long has the TV Critics Awards been around?
The TCA Awards, this will be our 35th year. We need to figure out if we're going to honor that semi-milestone in any particular way. I'm personally of the opinion that not everything that ends in a 5 or a 0 needs to be treated as a milestone, but, you know, the internet disagrees with me on that one. So I think probably we will have to honor it in some way. But yes, this is the 35th annual TCA Awards. They will be held on August 3rd at the Beverly Hilton. It is, as always, not a televised award show, but this year's show will be hosted by Desus and Mero of Showtime's Desus and Mero.
Yep.
Have you watched Desus and Mero?
Yes, I have.
Do you enjoy it?
Oh, very much. Very, very much.
Yes, it is. It is a really funny show, I have enjoyed it. I have enjoyed the move from once a week to twice a week, but I don't need them to do any more than that. And I just only because I don't have time. It's as simple as that.
I gotcha.
Don't add more because I do not have time. But so it will be hosted by the great Desus and Mero, who are also, as we will get to in a minute, nominees this year, which is very nice. We give awards in 13 categories, I believe. It tends to be a reasonably brisk show. Back 10 or 15 years ago, we used to be able to do the show in only a hair over an hour. It's probably expanded to closer to 90 minutes, but even that by award show standards is pretty brisk. And very much looking forward to this year's show, which will also mark the end of my TCA presidency. So it will be momentous and milestone-y in that respect as well.
Well, let's go through the nominations. The individual achievement in drama, and again, you don't split these up by sex.
Yes, we do not split them up by gender or by gender. Lead or supporting. It is all, it is basically six nominees for best individual drama, best individual comedy, no rules, no walls, no barriers.
There you go. All right. Amy Adams, Sharp Objects. Patricia Arquette, Escape at Dannemora. Christine Baranski, The Good Fight. Jodie Comer, Killing Eve. Billy Porter, Pose. Michelle Williams, Fosse Verdon. That's a pretty impressive list of nominees right there.
It really, really, really is. I love that list. That is a list of really great performances that also does a terrific job of covering up how generally subpar the awards races in the drama categories are going to be this year. So by including movie miniseries performances in there, we managed to make it look pretty solid. Those are great performances, every single one of them, and it's to some degree an Emmy preview because you have all of the lead actors in a movie miniseries,
yeah,
people who I've been talking up. So you got Adams versus Arquette versus Michelle Williams, but Billy Porter's phenomenal in Pose. Jodie Comer is just great in Killing Eve, and I'm happy to see a little bit of respect for Christine Baranski in The Good Fight because it needs more being talked about.
All right. Individual achievement in comedy, Pamela Adlon, Better Things, Bill Hader, Barry, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, Veep, Natasha Lyonne for Russian Doll, Catherine O'Hara for Schitt's Creek, Phoebe Waller-Bridge for Fleabag.
Love this category too, honestly.
Yeah.
And the thing I love most about this category is that Pamela Adlon, Bill Hader, Natasha Lyonne, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge all are creator stars. And Pamela Adlon, Bill Hader, and Natasha Lyonne are all creator stars who also directed episodes of their shows, also directed, in fact, among the best episodes of their shows. So, another great category. And then you have Catherine O'Hara. And
yeah, well, she's you know,
fantastic.
What can you say about Catherine O'Hara? I mean, she's a, you know, she's a legend.
If the people in the category who aren't creator stars just happen to be Catherine O'Hara and Julie Louis-Dreyfus,
right,
you're doing okay, and you're also putting a premium on the amount of achievement that you have to have. This is a fantastic category. I would have found room for Rami Youssef of Hulu's Rami here. What can you do? But yeah, great category, powerhouse category, and honestly, both of these two categories, whoever wins is going to deserve to win. There is not a person in this group of 12 who would not be a deserving winner.
Outstanding Achievement News and Information, 60 Minutes, America to Me, Leaving Neverland, Our Planet, The Rachel Maddow Show, and Surviving R. Kelly. Interesting group right there.
It is, and reflects that a lot of heavy stuff was on TV and news and information. But to me, the best in this category by a wide margin is America to Me. I get the feeling that a lot of my colleagues have not seen America to Me, and you know, there's just a lot of TV out there. There's nothing I can do other than to tell people that America to Me was the best thing that aired on television last year, and so it goes. But yes, good category, and a lot of different kinds of stuff. So you got your nature stuff, you got your various horrible sexual abuse stuff, you got your news magazine stuff, lots of stuff there.
The best achievement in reality, dominated by Netflix. The Great British Baking Show, Making It, Nailed It, Queer Eye, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo.
I watch a lot of reality TV. This is not the reality TV I watch. That is basically, and you know, that's God bless is all I can say to that. You know, there's no, these are the TCA Awards. These are not the Daniel Feinberg Awards. And so, you know, I might have written down Top Chef in my list of nominees, and if it didn't make the cut, that's fine. This is honestly a group of shows that I have very little opinion on, but I'm sure they're good.
Yeah. Okay. Outstanding Achievement in Youth Programming, Arthur, Carmen Sandiego, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, Muppet Babies, Odd Squad, Sesame Street.
See above. These are not shows that I watch myself so much, but I strongly encourage the TCA members with kids or interest in TV in kids programming to vote wisely here.
Yeah. Outstanding Achievement in Sketch Variety Shows, Dita Samero, as you mentioned, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, I Think You Should Leave, which just got renewed last week Tonight with John Oliver, Late Night with Seth Meyers, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Those are good shows. You know, would I always want to find room for a daily show here for Trevor Noah? Absolutely. There are a few other comparable shows, but once again, those are all great shows, and so whether my vote would be for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver or Jesus and Mero, I am happy with the wide variety of things that are there, and happy that Saturday Night Live didn't get nominated because whatever.
Outstanding Achievement in Movie or Miniseries, Chernobyl, Deadwood the Movie, Escape at Dannemora, Fosse Verdon, Sharp Objects, and When They See Us.
All good. There ain't nothing bad there. those are all, you know, some of them are really, really, in fact, almost all of them are really tough to watch. I would say the Deadwood movie is the one that's not tough to watch, both because it's short and also, or relatively short, and because if you're a Deadwood fan, it'll just move you along and be emotional the whole way.
Yeah.
But otherwise, some of these are tough to watch. Fosse Verdon's a lot of fun. Sharp Objects is occasionally fun. Chernobyl and When They See Us are, they are not like homework, but they are definitely like taking yourself into a dark, dark place
right.
for 5 hours.
Right.
So, but they're also good.
Outstanding new program, Dead to Me, the other two, Pose, Russian Doll, Succession, and What We Do in the Shadows. Good category.
I would have liked to have seen Rami there. That is a personal preference thing. I would have liked to have seen Hulu's Pen 15 there. There are a few shows I might have liked to have seen, but not because I think any of these are bad shows. Even the ones that I think are a little bit lesser, it's more of a subjective thing. The other two I simply don't find quite as funny as some people do, but
right.
Lots of people who I think are very, very smart find that show extremely funny, and yeah, this is another great category, and whether my preference would be for Succession or Russian Doll or Pose, for me, there would be no wrong choice there.
Yeah.
I think there probably are less right choices in this category, but
all right.
I think there's some good choices, too.
Outstanding achievement in drama, Better Call Saul, The Good Fight, Homecoming, Killing Eve, Pose, and Succession. Succession in the drama category, as we've discussed, Dan, it's a comedy.
It should be noted that two of these nominees are actually nominees that I have said very, very publicly in my writing are comedies. I've also called The Good Fight very clearly a dark comedy.
Yeah.
I voted for Succession as a drama because I knew there was no way I was going to get
right,
in as
okay,
a comedy.
I gotcha.
sometimes my own personal indignation and preferences and principles have to be put aside in favor of pragmatic reality.
Yeah.
And this was a case where there was no chance, especially once Succession was a drama for Emmy purposes, there was no chance it was getting
right.
into the comedy fields,
right.
regardless of how indignant I may be. But
okay. All right.
So there it is, the drama. It'll do. And honestly, given how weak the drama roster on TV has been this year, that's as close to a right group of six as I think we could have gotten.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with that.
Outstanding achievement in comedy, Barry, Fleabag, The Good Place, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Russian Doll, Schitt's Creek, and Veep. All very good.
Once again, the very little to complain about there. This is the only category in which there are seven nominees because there was a tie. So, huzzah. It let us get in one additional show. I'm not going to say which one, but very, very happy with all those nominations. Those are great shows.
And then finally, Program of the Year, Chernobyl, Fleabag, Game of Thrones, Pose, Russian Doll, When They See Us. So,
the most notable thing here clearly is that Game of Thrones is nominated here and not for outstanding achievement in drama.
Yeah.
That is a reflection on the fact that the Program of the Year category takes into account more than just whether something is good. It takes into account basically what its place was in the year of television.
Yeah.
So if we decide it's Game of Thrones, even if I didn't love most of the season, I understand why it could win. I can justify it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Otherwise, there are a lot of great shows.
So there you go. August 3rd, it will be announced. And we'll talk to you before then. But there it is. Lots of TV stuff to talk about. Dan, always great to talk to you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. And feel better, Nick.
Thanks, man. Take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He'll join us again in a couple of weeks. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to jump into terrible TV shows from the 70s. I wish this song's a little more dramatic. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. get your request in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Bonnie Tyler?
That was Ike.
Ike.
Yeah.
All right.
Wanted to hear a little bit of the Welsh Wailer.
Yeah. All right. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Again, get your Triple Play requests in. And there you go. So we were talking TV with our good friend Dan Feinberg. Always a blast to talk to him. And I found this article with the worst TV shows of the 70s. And I'm going to go through these and see if we can remember some of them. Maybe we don't remember some of them. But there was a lot of bad television in the 70s. A lot of bad television. And if you guys want to jump in here with what you think are some of the worst TV shows of that decade, we would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So the first one they mention here is a show called The Andros Targets. The Andros Targets. The story of a reporter who shines a light on the corruption in New York City didn't make it very far in 1977. It started as a mid-season replacement and was not renewed come May. It starred James Sartorius, Pamela Reed, Roy Poole, Alan Mixon, and Jordan Charney. Pamela Reed's the only actor out of that group that I even know. The Andros Targets.
You've also got a few interesting characters showing up. Danny Aiello is in three episodes.
Danny Aiello.
Patti LuPone is in two episodes.
They must have shot it in New York. They had to have shot it on location in New York. So, it was a mid-season replacement, 1977, got canceled. I don't remember that one at all. All right, what's next here? The American Girls. I have a slight recollection of this one. The American Girls. It's explained, often seen as CBS trying to replicate ABC's Jiggle TV model. The American Girls was basically a Charlie's Angels knockoff where the girls were investigative reporters, and it only lasted six episodes. That was back in the Jiggle TV era. Because they had Charlie's Angels and they had like Three's Company. ABC had a lot of shows where Jiggle TV is what they called it, because a lot of shows where women's breasts would be jiggling, and that's what they called it. But this American Girls, I have a slight recollection of this one. And at that time, it was, I mean, these shows were huge. Charlie's Angels was a massive hit, and Three's Company obviously was a big hit too. But can you look up the American Girls?
Yeah, I got it right here for you. So
who's in it?
Let's see, Priscilla Barnes.
Oh, well, she's from Three's Company.
Yeah, Deborah Klinger.
Okay.
And David Spielberg are the three top listed.
Okay. Okay.
Each of them in just seven episodes.
Yeah. And so what year? 70 what?
78.
Oh, that makes sense. That was right at the height of the popularity of all of those ABC shows.
Mm-hmm.
The American Girls.
It kind of freaks me out sometimes to think of how many, like, television shows come out in a given year.
Yeah.
That you will just never remember.
Oh, you won't
again.
Remember any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, you know, as the years go by, they just pile up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How about this one? Bearcats! With an exclamation point. One word. Bearcats. B-E-A-R-C-A-T-S. Bearcats.
The most terrifying combination ever known to man.
Even though it was heavily promoted by CBS, this Western marked the declining interest of American audiences in the genre. It was canceled after only 13 episodes. Is it a Western?
Kind of.
Bearcats?
Yeah.
What?
It takes place in pre-World War I American Southwest. So there's automobiles, but...
Okay. Who are the stars?
Rod Taylor and Dennis Cole.
Wow, Rod Taylor and Dennis Cole. Okay.
Not bad.
Yeah. But it only lasted 13 episodes. Anybody remember Bearcats?
Leslie Nielsen appears in an episode.
Oh, good.
Henry Silva.
What year was that?
So that was 71.
So that's early 70s. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's see what we got. What is the next? Another day. I remember. I vaguely remember this one. And I'm looking at the picture of the. I think that was that David Groh. Let's see. What does it say here? Another Day is your general tale of a middle class family trying to make ends meet. Audiences weren't intrigued, however, because it was canceled after only four episodes. It only made four episodes. Another Day. And there are a couple of kid actors in this picture that I think grew up to be somebody. Do you have a list of?
Yeah, I've got a few people here. Hope Summers.
Okay.
Joan Hackett.
Oh, sure, Joan Hackett. Sure.
David Groh.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. David Groh. This has got to be pre-Rhoda.
Mm-hmm. Four episodes.
Yeah. Who else was in?
Lisa Lindgren.
Okay.
Al Eisenman.
Uh huh.
Let's see, Gary Imhoff or Imhoff.
Yeah, those aren't really ringing bells.
Only
four episodes of Another Day.
How bad do you have to be?
Four episodes? Well, listen, they canceled Swamp Thing after one.
That's true.
I didn't even get a chance to watch it. I was kind of intrigued by it, but yeah. Okay. Let's break here, and then when we come back, what are some of the worst TV shows of the 70s that you remember? Because there was a lot of crappy television in that decade, and that's what we're talking about here. And we'll go through this article with a little more. So far, I only vaguely remember one or two of these things. These were bad. All right, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and that's a triple play request for some Bonnie Tyler. That's the second one. We got one more to go. Triple play Thursday. Yeah, man, triple play Thursday. Get your requested now. One hour is three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, we're talking about terrible TV shows from the 70s. Some of them are really just weird. Like the last one we just talked about, this show called Another Day. Four episodes it lasted. Joan Hackett and David Groh. Joan Hackett was in a TV movie with James Farentino in the 70s when everybody, you know, like after The Exorcist had made so much money that then they were just releasing movies in the theaters that were total ripoffs of The Exorcist, like Beyond the Door. You ever seen Beyond the Door?
No.
You've never seen Beyond the Door?
Beyond the Door?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah.
So it is just straight up beat-for-beat ripoff?
It's not a little girl. It's an actual adult woman who's possessed. Juliette Mills, by the way, who was on a show called The Nanny and the Professor. British actress. Total Italian filmed knockoff of The Exorcist, Beyond the Door. And it made a ton of money because they made it Beyond the Door 2 after it. So there was Beyond the Door. There was also a really scary movie called Antichrist, which also is called The Tempter. And that was also in the 70s. And that's actually a pretty scary movie. That's actually a pretty scary film.
Looks like she was also in a TV movie with Harrison Ford.
Who, Juliette Mills?
Sorry, Joan Hackett.
Oh, Joan Hackett.
Yeah. Get this. So Harrison Ford, James Farentino, directed by Jerry Thorpe. It's called The Possessed.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's the one?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the movie that I'm talking about. James Farentino played like a priest, and she gets possessed.
Okay.
And it had to be like 74, 75.
77, actually.
77, yeah. Okay. I mean, well, the possession, you know, the possession craze went on for years.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, The Possessed. TV movie where she's I think she's the headmistress of a, if I remember correctly, headmistress of a girls' boarding school, and I think Harrison Ford's like the custodian.
Paul Winjam.
And James Ferrantino's a priest who has to exorcise her, or a minister. I don't know, but and that was a real popular TV, The Possessed. Yeah,
and I thought it got bad in the 2000s with like the exorcism craze, because there was a lot of stuff that like the
Devil,
Exorcist,
Devil Inside.
Yeah, Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Actually, I like that movie.
You like that one?
I do. That was like a combination of The Exorcist and Law and Order. It was like a courtroom drama with a girl who happened to be possessed.
Right.
And I thought Jennifer Carpenter was great in that movie. Mm-hmm. I thought she was really, really great, like especially physically. The stuff that she did when she was possessed and physically and had to contort her body and stuff like that. It was a really energetic and really good performance. I like that one. But like Devil Inside was unwatchable.
The Last Exorcism.
Terrible.
Really bad.
Yeah.
And then it just led into, I guess, the Conjuring level stuff. Once the Conjuring came out, that's its own can of worms.
Yeah, it's the Conjuring universe.
I think
there's another Annabelle movie coming out.
I think it just premiered last night.
Well, it's not released yet to the public, but they did have it's been
a screening.
Yeah. Another Annabelle movie in The Conjuring. I like the first Conjuring.
Mm.
I thought the first Conjuring was good, and particularly Lily Taylor. Lily Taylor was great. But those movies, I don't have a lot of patience for those. But Eric is a backer of those movies.
Really?
Oh yeah.
You like some?
Yeah.
I'm not a big ghost person.
Depends on there are some scary ghost movies. Have you seen The Haunting? Robert Weiss movie from the 60s?
No, I have seen The Haunting.
That's a scary movie.
It's scary.
You ever see The Changeling?
No.
With George C. Scott?
No.
Haunted House movie.
Okay.
Until Hereditary, the scariest seance scene of all time is in The Changeling with George C. Scott. It's a terrific movie.
Okay.
Peter Medic directed it. It's a Canadian film. And it's good. It's a really, really solid ghost movie. And like I said, until Hereditary blew every seance scene out of the water, it held that. I mean, it held that spot. And that movie came out like 78 or 79, The Changeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was the other ones were Beyond the Door. It goes by two. This is another Italian movie, the Italian ripoff movies. It goes by two names. One is Antichrist, and it's not the Von Trier. And the other is The Tempter. Those are the two names that it goes by. And I remember seeing that movie, and it freaked me out when I was a kid.
74?
I would imagine so. It's Italian. Who's the director?
Albert DiMartino.
That's it?
Yeah, The Antichrist, or El Anticristo.
Yeah. It's a freaky movie, a very, very, very freaky movie that I remember seeing in the theater, and it did freak me out. So, but yeah, Joan Hackett, star of Another Day, a show that lasted four episodes on TV in the 70s, was the star of The Possessed. So, yeah. All right, we're talking about the worst TV shows of the 70s. Which ones? I mean, it was a pretty strong decade for crap on TV. 262 area code is reminding all of us of The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo. Claude Akins was the star of that show, Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo. That was during that time period where there were a lot of sort of like country shows on where people drove trucks. And it was like the Dukes of Hazzard was out there and all these other stupid shows. BJ and the Bear. And I never understood why the monkey was called the Bear.
Wait, okay. So this is, as someone who's literally never seen BJ and the Bear.
Yeah.
I've only heard of BJ and the Bear.
Greg Evigan and a monkey.
There's no bear.
No bear.
It's a monkey named Bear.
The monkey is named Bear. BJ and the Bear.
And this was a popular show?
I don't know how long it lasted, but, I mean, it was on for a while.
Oh, my God.
And it was one of those shows, Dukes of Hazzard, Sheriff Lobo, people driving in trucks, I got a monkey in my cab, you know, that kind of thing.
At least I get the point of the Dukes of Hazzard. At least I saw the movie that inspired it, Moonshiners or something.
Yeah.
And I thought I got a kick out of the Dukes of Hazzard. My dad thought it was real funny because he found Southerners real funny.
Yeah, no, that should have been in my wheelhouse too, because I think when it premiered I was 13 or something, so I should have loved it, but no.
Them Duke boys are up to Waylon Jennings.
Waylon Jennings.
What do those Duke boys do next?
No. That was not my scene, man.
you're not into redneck moonshine?
Although I love Smokey and the Bandit.
Where are you on White Lightning and
Love
Gator.
White Lightning yeah. and Gator. I love both those movies. God, Ned Beatty, what a jerk. I know.
he got plenty of lip service from Joe Bob the other night.
You know, White Lightning has one of my favorite Burt Reynolds endings, where the big car chase, and then he parks the car on a slant by a beach, and Ned Beatty's car goes flying over slow motion into the water. I remember when I was a kid, I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Cut to him pushing a girl on the swing, and that's it as a credit. And you're just like, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a period of time that we missed.
We did. So, all right. Here's Craig on WGN. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
You talked about the original Haunting from the late 60s.
Yeah.
When they did make a remake in the 90s with Liam Neeson.
Yes.
And I believe Lily Taylor was in that.
She was in
that.
Yes, she was.
All right. Yeah. I took my daughter to the theater. She was like 16 or 17. And we watched the remake.
Yeah.
And that movie relied heavily on special effects, obviously. So we went home and I went to the video store. And I found a copy of the original.
Yeah.
And we sat and watched it. And because that movie relied solely on music and lighting.
Oh, yeah.
And my daughter said, that's way scarier than the
Absolutely.
Remake.
Absolutely. The remake was terrible. The remake was terrible. And the original Haunting is a very scary movie, the original one. And
It is, and there's no special effects.
No, not at all. It's all sound, and it's all, you know, use of camera. And, like, there's a scene where the door is being banged on. That's terrifying. And it's just it's just someone banging on a door. There are no effects, nothing like that.
Well, and there's that one scene where they do a seance.
Yep.
And the protoplasma, whatever it is, comes out of the woman's fingernails and it just grows.
Yep.
I mean, that just sends chills down your spine.
Great stuff. Yeah, the remake was terrible.
And one quick thing before I go. You were talking about truckers.
Yeah.
CW McCall released that song, Convoy.
Sure.
And they couldn't import enough CB radios.
Yeah. No, that was one of the CBs were one of the biggest crazes of the 70s.
And that unleashed all those trucker movies.
Yeah, and Convoy was that song was massively popular. It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Craig.
You couldn't go a half hour without hearing it, man.
All right. Thanks, Craig. Take care, buddy.
All right. Have a good night. You too. Bye.
Yeah, CB radios, Tom. You missed out on that.
I would, you know. It seems amazing. And all those movies, you know, the number one way to circumvent the law is CB radio.
Yeah.
The last bastion of free speech.
All right. Here's another bad TV show from the 70s. You ready for this one? I totally remember watching this. Chopper One. I totally remember watching this one. After Emergency became a hit for NBC, there was an abundance of emergency service shows that tried to also connect with audiences. Unfortunately, this series about a California police helicopter team wasn't one of the successful ones. Chopper One. Yeah, I used to watch Emergency. I loved that show. Yeah, you know, Chips, all that crap.
Chips.
Yeah. Chopper One, who was it? Was Randolph Mantooth in Chopper? Because he was in Adam 12. Randolph Mantooth.
Jim McMullen.
Uh-huh.
Dirk Benedict.
No Randolph Mantooth?
No Mantooth.
Okay, because he was on Adam 12. Randolph Mantooth. Also one of the greatest names in television history.
Yeah, I can't believe that there's a person. I'm guessing
Randolph Mantooth.
Is that a stage name?
I don't know.
I'm going to find
it. Why would you change your name to Mantooth? Why would you want that to be your...
Just badass.
Randolph Mantooth. Terrible TV shows from the 70s. Chopper One. I do remember watching Chopper One. I watched all that emergency cop stuff. I loved cop shows and emergency shows. I loved all that crap. Now I can't watch. I don't watch any of that kind of nonsense.
No more cop shows?
No. I don't watch. I should watch all the Chicago shows because my friends are all over them. They're in all of them. But I don't watch any of that stuff.
Yeah, it's not grabbed my attention. I was really into SVU, but that's not really much of a cop show. It's not, strictly speaking, a cop show.
I'm trying to think of if there are any, like, cop shows. No, not really. How about this? 301 area code says, that pathetic attempt to make a live-action Spider-Man show in the 70s was pretty bad. Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. Luke in Albany Park says, Swamp Thing is still airing its remaining episodes on Fridays on DC Universe. They just won't make anything past this season. Oh.
All right.
Well, they announced it was canceled after one episode.
Yeah. Well, at least you can get the whole series in one go.
You can watch the whole thing, but it was announced that it was canceled after the first episode.
And his Randolph Mantooth was, in fact, born Randy Mantooth. Randy DeRoy Mantooth.
His real name is Mantooth. Forever going to be associated with Adam 12. That was the big Randolph Mantooth thing. So, all right. And only in the 70s could a guy be on TV with the name Randolph Mantooth. So, we are talking about the worst TV shows from the 70s, and there's a lot to choose from. So we're going to continue talking about that, but we're going to break here for a couple of commercials, and then we'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
One artist, three songs. Pick them out now. Request them now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Okay, we are talking about some of the worst TV shows from the 70s. And the 70s, you know, was a decade that was jam-packed with terrible television. And we're having some fun remembering these, or maybe not remembering them. This next one is legendary. David Cassidy, Man Undercover. This is David Cassidy, obviously, from the Partridge Family. In his first starring role since The Partridge Family, David Cassidy played an undercover cop who poses as a student to investigate a high school drug ring. After 10 episodes, it was off the air. So basically, it was like 21 Jump Street, because that was the plot of 21 Jump Street. And that stupid movie with John Cryer.
Pink?
No, where he's like an adult hiding out. It's called Hiding Out, where he goes back to high school. But I love the fact that, like, can you look up David Carradine or David Carradine, David Cassidy, Man Undercover?
Yeah. Yeah, here we go.
And his name is, here's the thing, his name in this show, if I remember correctly, his name, the character's name is not David Cassidy. But the title of the show is David Cassidy, Man Undercover, because people would recognize his name from the Partridge Family.
Yeah, his name is Officer Dan Shea.
Yeah. See? David Cassidy, Man Undercover. But that's not his name.
I guess he's undercover. It's David Cassidy undercover as Officer Dan Shea, undercover as whoever.
Yeah. And the one of his co-stars is a guy that was a Simon
Oakland.
Simon Oakland. Yeah. That guy was in 8,000 shows, all cop shows, and he always played like the boss. He always played like the lieutenant that you had to report to, and he'd yell at you. You know, like the Frank McRae role in 48 Hours.
Yeah,
where he's just screaming at Nolte the whole time.
Dang it, Shea. You blew up 400 cars.
Yeah. David Cassidy. Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean,
Officer Shea. 765 area code, bringing up some terrible TV from the 70s. Tabitha, starring Lisa Hartman. Tabitha was the further adventures of Elizabeth Montgomery and Sam and Darren's daughter, who was a witch. So this is her as an adult. Sequel to Bewitched. Baby, I'm Back with Demond Wilson. Of course, that's Lamont from Sanford and Son. I remember that. Super Train, terrible show. Man from Atlantis and the Barbary Coast with William Shatner and Doug McClure. These are all terrible. 847 area code says, I had to cheat and look up some TV shows from the 70s since nothing sounds familiar, and one of the worst listed is Get Christy Love. I loved Get Christy Love. What was the actress's name who played Christy Love? Tamara Davis?
I'll find it right here. Apparently they did an updated version.
Well, that was Get Christy Love was inspired by the wonderful work of Pam Grier in the blaxploitation genre at that time, and they wanted to do like a TV version of a Pam Grier type show.
All right, so series from 74 to 75.
Yeah.
Teresa Graves.
As yeah, Christy Teresa Love. Graves. Yeah. They talk about that in the car in Reservoir Dogs. That was one of my favorites, so it goes to show. That shows how clueless I was back then. You mentioned Bearcats. I never heard of that. And they attributed that to the decline of the Westerns, which was true. I remember what brought back interest in the Westerns in the studio's backing, the fantastic movie Silverado around 1984. I think that was when it was released. Silverado came out in 85, and there was a resurgence in popularity of Westerns, too, because that was the same year that Pale Rider came out, Clint Eastwood's Pale Rider, which is a phenomenal movie. Clint was still making Westerns in the 70s, though. When you can't deny Outlaw Josie Wales. What are we talking about here?
That was on cable so much.
That movie rules.
So good.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they're... apparently, they're still trying to develop this reboot of Get Christy Love for ABC.
Really?
Still working on it.
Okay. All right. How about C.B. McCall is Chip Davis from Mannheim Steamroller. Mannheim Steamroller. Only know them from Christmas. 301 area codes. I guess they didn't want it confused with Me and the Chimp, which was, I guess, a different show. Okay, so next here on worst TV shows of the 70s, Doc Elliott. It looks to be, it looks to me that James Franciscus is the star of this one.
That would be correct.
And remember I mentioned James Ferrantino a little early?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here are the three guys that you would get mixed up back in the 70s, and they were in everything. Because you had James Ferrantino, who was in Dead and Buried, the Gary Sherman movie. James Franciscus and Tony Franciosa. Those three guys were like interchangeable. My favorite was James Ferrantino. He was always my favorite of those guys. James Franciscus took over for Charlton Heston in Beneath.
Yeah,
Planet of the Apes.
That's literally the only reason I know who he is. And then I saw he's in Cat of Nine Tails.
He is in Cat of Nine Tails. Yeah.
I was very excited about that.
Yeah. But it's either James Franciscus, James Ferrantino, or Tony Franciosa. That was your Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott of the 70s. Do you remember the sketch they did on SNL? Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney?
Yeah. Hilarious. I've seen a few times.
Hilarious. All right, yeah, let's break here because we got the news coming up. And then after the news, we'll jump back into this. What are the worst TV shows of the 70s? We're having some fun with this. 312-981-7200. News up next.
Rolling to Boston, hard on my sleeve. 200 bodies is all I need. These boys are hungry. I'm a little vain. The truth is.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. You've been Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Who was that and who requested that?
So that was Boy George and Culture Club with the song Runaway Train. And that's coming to us from Brian.
Really?
Yeah, brand new album. Brand new.
Wow. All right. I happen to love Boy George and Culture Club.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that they were still working.
It's far cry from Karma Chameleon there.
Karma Chameleon, man. Karma Chameleon. Yeah. The most ridiculous lyrics of a Culture Club song. War is stupid and people are stupid. That's like, that's one of the lyrics to Culture Club. We are talking about really terrible TV shows, specifically from the decade of the 70s. There's a lot to choose from, and some of these we remember, some of these we don't. But we're having some fun talking about really bad TV shows from the 70s, and we would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. Do you know there was a spinoff of Breaking Away?
Yes, with Sean Cassidy.
Yeah, Sean Cassidy. I think he played I think he was David Stoller.
Yeah, he was Stoller.
It had Jackie Earle Haley as Moocher.
Yep.
But it had, Barbara Barry, and it had whoever played the policeman who was...
John Ashton.
Yeah, and it only lasted like 8 or 10 episodes.
Yeah, they didn't need to. I mean, they didn't need to make a TV show out of Breaking Away.
Well, it was kind of an ambitious idea.
Yeah.
Okay, then there was a version of Animal House.
Yeah.
That had the guy that played D-Day.
Yeah, and it had Stephen Furst. Flounder was in it too. It was called Delta House.
Okay. Yeah, Delta House,
yeah.
And that didn't last very long.
It was a terrible show.
There was also a version of Seth. That was on TV, but it didn't last very long either. And it didn't have Richard Roundtree as
I remember they did that. They did have that. I can't remember who played him. But yeah, that wasn't a very good idea. None of those are very good ideas, actually.
So, well, I mean, it kind of sounds ambitious. I mean, you think, well, you know, hey, you know, it's like a never ending movie.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is gonna go on for a long time, but of course
right,
that didn't work out.
Nope. Thanks,
okay.
Jack.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, Breaking Away. Don't mess with Breaking Away. Don't try to make a TV show out of Breaking Away. Because it's a perfect movie. So, you know, TV show with Sean Cassidy. Oh, God. All right, we got some more texts here for bad TV shows from the 70s. 331 area code, if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Another bad TV show from the 70s was Moving On with Claude Akins. Yeah, Claude Akins was in a lot of bad TV shows. Most of them involving trucks of some kind. 309 area code says, don't omit Bionic Woman. I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for both $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman.
I thought they were good whenever I saw reruns.
Yeah. I mean, they're not. I mean, you go back and watch them now, and they're pretty stupid. But back when I was a kid, you know, $6 Million Man was a big deal. 615 area code says, I hated Mary Hartman. I loved that show.
What is the premise of that show? I've heard it referenced, but never seen it.
It takes place in Fernwood, a fictional town, and... Louise Lasser played this housewife, and it was a satire of soap operas. There was no laugh track, which was unusual. It was a three-camera sitcom setup. Norman Lear produced it, and it was syndicated and it was shown on WFLD Channel 32 here in Chicago at 10 o'clock at night. So it was unusual that it was on that late.
Yeah. Huh.
And it was on that late, and it was on 5 nights a week, and it was a satire of a soap opera. And then there was a spinoff of a fake talk show called Fernwood Tonight, which was hosted by Martin Mull and Fred Willard. And they were the two hosts, and they would have fake guests. They would have actors come on as fake guests from Fernwood. And then that became a success and spawned America Tonight. And I loved all that stuff. I loved Mary Hartman, and I loved Fernwood Tonight, and I loved America Tonight. And both obviously Martin Mull and Fred Willard, my God. He's one of the funniest human beings that's ever lived.
That sounds like a really fun show.
It was weird. I got to say, I think people didn't like it because it was just a very strange show.
It seems a little ahead of its time.
It was way ahead of its time. Way, way, way ahead of its time. It was shot like a sitcom with the three-camera setup and a set. No studio audience, no laugh track. Satire of a soap opera, so things got sort of like edgy. And it was sort of, I think, if I remember correctly, there was like a parental guidance warning at the beginning of the show. And then they just decided, all right, let's branch out this Fernwood thing and make a fake talk show and have Martin Mull be the host and have Fred Willard be the sidekick.
That's
and then
wild,
they would have like fake people, you know, they would have actors playing characters that were, you know, they're singers or actors that were from Fernwood. But I mean, I loved Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. I thought that show was great and really weird. 773 area code says, I hated that kid on James at 15. What a douchebag. Lance Kerwin, man. Talking smack about Lance Kerwin? By the way, that show lasted two seasons, so in the second season it was called James at 16. And I remember when they, because I watched James at 15 and I watched James at 16. I liked it. And I thought I liked Lance Kerwin. Because I was about 13 maybe when that show was on, 13 or 14. So I was like right around that age, and so I liked it. I hate that kid on James at 15. What a douchebag. Lance Kerwin, man. But yeah, I remember at the beginning of the second season, the title pops up on the screen, and it says James at 15, and then they do like a scribble over 15. Like someone is taking a pencil and scribbling out 15, and then they write in 16. That's how they
did
it.
I gotta say, that's pretty clever.
They did that's a James at 16.
I gotta throw this out to you. Take a wild guess as to what Lance Kerwin is doing now. Like, what he does.
Chef.
No, Lance Kerwin currently sells timeshares with Wyndham Hotels and Resorts.
Oh, of course he does.
And lives on the island of Kauai, Hawaii.
Of course he does.
I gotta say, if you're selling timeshares, there's worse places to live.
Yeah. Lance Kerwin.
What a douchebag.
Hey, you leave James at 16/15 alone. No, I dug that show when I was a kid. All right, here's the worst TV shows of the 70s. Here's one called Dog and Cat. Dog and Cat. This is Kim Basinger's first lead role.
Created by Walter Hill.
That can't be the same Walter Hill.
I'm going to look.
It can't be the same Walter Hill.
The Click of Destiny. Oh, it definitely is. It definitely is.
What year?
This is 77, according to IMDb.
So that's that's post Hard Times, but pre-Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
That's right around when Hard Times came out. Wow. Dog and Cat is noted as Kim Basinger's first lead role after her stint as a model. The cop series, the title is police slang for a male and female partner pairing, received poor reviews and low ratings and only aired 6 episodes. Created by Walter Hill. Wow. Kim Basinger looks like she's 15. There's a picture of her in this. But yeah, 6 episodes, Dog and Cat. All right. How about this? This computer's taking forever. There we go. Oh God, I remember this. Flatbush. Oh my God, was this show terrible? Adrian Zmed was on it. I can tell you that much. Yeah, Flatbush. This is this sitcom about a group of calling themselves the Fungos. Followed high school grads as they tried to manage life in the Flatbush area of Brooklyn. Only 6 episodes were produced, but only 3 were aired before it was pulled from the airwaves, partially because the ethnic stereotypes portrayed were so offensive.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at these character names, it kind of screams Italian Anti-Defamation
League. Oh, yeah, no.
This seems bad.
I remember the show. I remember watching the show. And I'm trying to, who were some of the other actors on there? Because there was, I know Adrian Zmed was in it.
Yeah, we've got Joseph Calley.
Uh-huh.
Vincent Bufano. Randy Stumpf.
No Randolph Mantooth?
No. I can't get... Sandy Helberg. Donna Ponterato. Anthony Pozzini.
I actually, I vividly remember watching that show.
I mean, listen to these names. Presto Prestopopoulos, Sox Palermo, Turtle Romero, Joey D, Figueroa, Karma, and Miss Fortunato. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it was completely ridiculous. Like, absolutely ridiculous.
Were they talking like...
hey, Jesus, so... That water, it's wine now. Oh! It's Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ. All right. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, you mentioned Sean Cassidy. The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew Mysteries, they were no picnic to watch.
No, they weren't. Although I loved Pamela Sue Martin back then. I had a crush on Pamela Sue Martin.
Well, she even appeared on a cover of Playboy.
She wasn't. So. Yes, she was. And I had that
really?
Issue. Yes, I did. Yeah. But yeah, who was it? Parker Stevenson, right? Parker Stevenson was the other artist.
The Mr. Smile.
Yeah. Man, oh man. Yeah, but they were on every Sunday night. They would alternate. One week it would be a Hardy Boys mystery. The next week it would be a Nancy Drew mystery.
Yeah, but you mentioned Cassidy. That just popped in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big show. That was a popular show. The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew Mysteries, that was a very popular show for ABC.
Yeah, but ratings don't always make it good.
No, it's true. All right, Steve, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
I used to get beat up because I read Nancy Drew.
You read Nancy Drew, not Hardy Boys?
Yeah. I thought Hardy Boys was okay. For some reason, I really liked the Nancy Drew books, even though they were written by committee, basically.
Yeah.
Like, there's really not much difference between the two.
I read them... a little bit, and I read all the time when I was a kid, but but for some reason those books, I mean, I read some of them, but they didn't really, you know,
yeah,
they didn't do it for me. I was into Edgar Allan Poe, so that kind of stuff was like, huh? But I did watch the TV show, mostly the Nancy Drew stuff because of Pamela Sue Martin. That's basically the only reason any teenage boy would watch that show.
What's up with that Nick guy? He's always talking about crows and stuff.
Yeah. Ravens, you mean. All right. Listen, why don't we take a break here and we'll come back. And I've got more of the worst TV shows of the 70s. And we're reminiscing about really crappy TV and having some fun. And, of course, talking about actors and actresses we don't even know anymore. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200.
The best Chicago sports conversations start here every weekday morning. The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
New shoes?
Yes, I had the best day. I was greeted by a fit specialist who attended to me like I was the only person in the store. He asked all the right questions, listened to my every need, and guided me through an in-depth fit process to present the perfect options for me. I even walked out styled head to toe in all new activewear. It truly was the best shoe buying experience.
Where did you get those shoes?
At New Balance Chicago.
Experience New Balance Chicago's four locations, Lincoln Park, Oakbrook Terrace, Orland Park, and Schaumburg.
Hi, this is Lindsay from House Smarts Radio, and I'm with Tom Jenke of Builder Supply Outlet. You guys helped me with my kitchen remodel, bathrooms, but now I'm thinking about carpeting the kids' playroom.
Did you say carpeting? Lindsay, that is so 90s. We can help bring you up to date with the latest in flooring. We carry it all from our entry-level luxury vinyl to our padding-back LVT, WPC, and SPC.
SP what?
Forget the acronyms. It's 100% waterproof, durable, and strong, and looks gorgeous for years to come.
I love the authentic wood look, and you have it in stock.
Ready to take home today.
And because it's Builder Supply Outlet, I know I'm getting a quality product at a value that can't be beat.
We've got vinyl flooring starting as low as $1.79 per square foot.
Looks like I'm getting new flooring on a budget.
Builder Supply Outlet is located just 5 miles east of the Oak Brook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview. Or check us out online at buildersupplyoutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
I'm Mark Muller from Muller Volkswagen in Highland Park. We understand online car shopping is an invaluable tool for buyers, but I tell our customers all the time, you'll never know for sure if a car is right for you unless you see it, smell it, touch it, and drive it for yourself. The only person who should have an opinion on your car is you. And our Mueller staff is here to help you with that decision.
The summer savings is happening now on Route 41 in Highland Park or at MuellerVolkswagen.com. Mueller Volkswagen, follow your senses.
After darkness found out who I am. I know I'm crazy, but just a little sane. I get to take this ride again. Give me hope when I wake up to lift my head high and take what's mine. We look for laughter.
New Boy George and Culture Club. All right. It's Triple Play Thursday, man. You need Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. Here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. At 5 and at 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran with your morning drive on this Thursday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Get your texts and your calls in now. We've been talking about some of the worst TV shows of the 70s and remembering some really stupid shows that we remember watching. Now, the next one here is Flying High. And this one seems to be about sexy flight attendants. When a show's premise is described as following the lives of three sexy flight attendants, that's hardly a good sign. Poor reviews and stereotypical writing doomed this series that was trying to repeat the success again of Charlie's Angels. Do we know who the actresses were?
Yeah, we've got Connie Selica.
Oh, Connie Selica, sure.
Pat Klaus.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Witt. Howard Platt.
Howard Platt?
Yeah, as Captain Doug March.
Sure, of course. Of course he was the captain. There you go. It got to the point in the late 70s where it was just like, all right, let's just get three women, do something with them, and let them wear, you know, next to nothing. And it'll, because everybody was watching Charlie's Angels. Like, Charlie's Angels. Was,
totally.
Charlie's Angels was a massive hit. So they tried to do that several times. Flying High.
Let's make them accountants.
Yeah, sure.
Call it crunching numbers.
Yeah, sure. As long as they're scantily clad,
getting your taxes
that the,
done.
That was the requirement. Yeah, Jiggle TV, man. Not one of the prouder moments in network television history.
I really can't imagine.
Oh, it was huge. Those shows were huge. And they took a lot of heat for it too. ABC, because ABC was the leading network in Jiggle TV. They were the ones that, I mean, like, they had Three's Company, they had a couple of other shows, and they, of course, had Charlie's Angels. So, yeah. All right, how about this one? I remember this one. Gemini Man. Based on H.G. Wells' Invisible Man, this series followed a secret agent who could become invisible thanks to his exposure to radiation. While 11 episodes were produced, only 5 made it to air before the show was canceled. So, yeah, Gemini Man. I remember that. I remember that show. It was terrible. 5 episodes made it to air. That's it. Why would they call it Gemini Man and not Invisible Man if it's based on H.G. Wells' Invisible Man? Wouldn't you want to use a title that people recognize? You know, there's sort of like a built-in audience to something called The Invisible Man, not necessarily Gemini Man. Oh, boy. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, you brought up Nancy Drew and that, but what about Spin and Marty?
I don't remember Spin and Marty.
Yeah, it was on Mickey Mouse Club twice a week, and they had them growing up, and they were on a ranch, like for summer camp. And the first couple of years, it was just the boys, and then as they got older, the ranch next to them was a girls' ranch, a dude ranch, like, and Annette Funicello first came on doing acting on that one.
Oh, okay. So this was clearly not the 70s, though, Linda, because we were talking about shows from the 70s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because also in the late 60s was, I think it was High Time. That's when I first heard Ramsey Lewis play the piano. Paul Revere and the Raiders were on, and we would hurry home from school to watch us. That was another kid's mini soap opera.
Ah.
Tommy Rennick was in it, and that maybe some of your older listeners or even your dad might remember it.
Yeah, they might. They might. Okay, Linda, yeah. Thanks.
Sure.
Take care. We got a bunch of texts that just came in. By the way, Tom, can you look up Gemini Man?
Yeah, let's take a look here.
Because I can't remember who the star is. I'm looking at a picture of the guy, too. And I remember it was an awful show. Gemini Man. What does it say?
Let's see. All right. Starring Ben Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Catherine Crawford.
Uh-huh.
William Sylvester.
All the big stars.
Yeah.
Just an all-star cast right there.
Yeah.
Made it to 5 episodes. Gemini Man. Let's see. 847 area code says, I loved all those disaster action shows too, Nick. I remember Chopper 1, but there's one called Super Train that was apparently very expensive, was canceled after only 9 episodes. Yeah, we mentioned Super Train. Once again, I never heard of it, and that was in 1979. Some of the titles that would steer me away, Hee Haw Honeys. Well, yeah, Hee Haw Honeys. That was a spinoff of Hee Haw.
Was it? It sounds like it was risque.
Well, it was the girls from Hee Haw.
Okay, because Hee Haw was pretty family friendly.
Yeah, it was also one of the stupidest things that's ever been on TV.
What, you weren't into Hee Haw?
We watched it, but it was stupid. Me and the Chimp, the Ropers. Oh God, the Ropers! That's one of the worst spinoffs of all time.
Who's the Ropers? What was that from?
Three's Company.
Oh.
The Ropers were the first landlords. They were the downstairs neighbor, Norman Fell and Audra Lindley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they became very popular, so they got a spinoff, and they moved into a new townhouse next door to Jeffrey Tambor. And his wife, who was who was his wife? His wife was a child actress, and then obviously she was grown up in this. I want to say she was not the bad seed. Was she the bad seed? I can't remember, but The Ropers was a terrible show. A terrible show. And I just read that one of the terrible 70s shows, and it's kind of surprised me that they mentioned that it's the PTL Club. I remember my mom watching the show fixated with an eye cream and talked to her. She was one of the driving dads with the PTL Club sticker on the back bumper. I don't even think she knew that the show, what it was back then. It was just a different kind of thing where they were combining religion in a talk show format. Yeah. PTL Club. All right. Let's take a break here on 720 WGN. The news is coming up. 312-981-7200. Phone number if you want to jump in here for worst TV shows of the 70s.
I'm a poet in New York City. You can see a face in my shoes. I'm young and I'm alive, I've got nothing to lose. I dream a book, a lie, a kiss, so much to resist, and then I find you.
All right. Hey, all right, welcome welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, me, Triple Play Thursday. And that's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That is also the number to call or to text in your thoughts on really bad TV shows from the 70s. We've been having some fun remembering some of these terrible TV shows. But let's see. We got some more texts coming in. 815 area code said, children's Saturday morning show, Land of the Lost. Well, I mean, the classic Sid and Marty Krofft ridiculousness from the 60s and 70s. That's what we grew up on. People my age, you know, you go back and you look at the children's shows that we watched in the 60s and 70s growing up, and they were weird. They were just weird. And Sid and Marty Krofft were the guys that were behind some of the weirdest TV shows of all time. And, you know, I just picture these guys sitting around a room blowing weed going, hey, I think I got a good idea. But Land of the Lost, I loved that show. I loved that show. 847 area code says, Nick, you're so right about the shows you love being the same age as me. I guess that makes sense. Mary Hartman. I forgot about that until now. It was so good. It kind of seemed to me like they were trying to present it in a British TV comic style. And it works as far as I remember, but that was 40 years ago. Now, I have to say, I don't know how Mary Hartman has aged. Or Fernwood Tonight or America Tonight. But I loved it when it was in first run. I thought it was great. 847 area code says, hey, Nick, do you remember the show Prisoners Cell Block 9? I do. Yes. 815 area code says, from memory, Lance Kerwin played Michael Landon in a movie as a real-life bedwetter. Yes, that's true. That's true. It was because I guess Michael Landon was a bedwetter until he was like 13 or 14 or something like that. So they made, of course, they had to make a TV movie out of it. And I don't remember if Michael Landon directed it. But yes, that was Lance Kerwin. And I just, here's what I remember, that they would, as punishment for him wetting the bed, that they would hang the sheets outside so that all the neighbors could see them. That's the only thing that I remember about the movie. It's terrible. But yeah, I remember it was a big deal because it was, you know, Michael Landon sharing his personal story. But that's the only detail I remember, is that they hung the sheets out. And I think the father hung the sheets out to embarrass the kid. When he come home from school, there'd be the pee-stained sheets hanging outside. Ed says Coast to Coast and Beretta. Beretta was one of my favorite. We've talked about Beretta before. I loved Beretta. I love that show. And that was preceded by a show called Toma, which I've told you about before, Tom, because it's Tony Musante from Bird with a Crystal Plumage. He was Toma. Canadian Bill says, any Canadian show ever shot in Canada in the 70s except Hart and Lauren's Terrific Hour, a sketch comedy show that starred Lauren Michaels and Dan Aykroyd, Andre Martin, and Victor Gerber. It ran from 70 to 71. So he's saying every other Canadian show was terrible.
Not a great time for Canadian TV, I guess.
Bob J. says the TV show UFO in Space 1999 were cool shows as a kid. Now you watch them and they are awful.
I don't mind a little Space 1999.
I haven't seen that. And I didn't watch that regularly. I watched it a few times. But I remember it was big. It was very, very popular. Mm-hmm.
They just remastered it. They did it all in HD.
Did they?
Yeah.
Not all right. How about this one? One of the worst TV shows of the 70s, Gibbsville. Gibbsville, Gibbsville. When it aired in the fall of 1976, Gibbsville was set 25 years earlier in the 1940s. NBC made 13 episodes, but it only aired 6. Because of low ratings. A very young John Savage is in Gibbsville. This is a show that I have no memory of whatsoever. Yeah, I have no memory of it whatsoever. But it's a young John, pre-Deer Hunter, young John Savage. So, and I, yeah, Gibbsville. 6 episodes and that was it. Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We are talking about terrible shows from the 70s. Here's Tony on WGN. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, got a couple cartoons for you from that era. Remember Lance Link, Secret Chimp?
Lancelot Link, yeah.
Yeah, and Mata Hari, they had the
mouth
moving on the chimps.
Yep, real chimps, and, real chimps. I told you about this show, right, Tom?
No, what is...
Whoa, you don't know Lancelot Link?
No.
Oh, dude. Lancelot Link is, again, a show from the 60s into the early 70s when every children's show was weird. And this was a show that followed the adventures of a secret agent, and it was populated by actual chimpanzees. That was the show. And then they would do musical numbers, too, like psychedelic late 60s musical numbers. And I can't remember the name of the band. Do you remember the name of the band, Tony, and Lancelot Link?
No, I don't. I just remember his girlfriend, Mata Hari, or Mata Hari.
Yeah, Mata Hari was in it, yeah. too. But the band had a name. They had a name. Yeah. I know it was like some sort of weird sort of psychedelic name for the band Lancelot Link. But no, you should look this stuff up on, Tom, you should look this stuff up on YouTube because it's pretty spectacular.
And then you brought up Atoma.
Toma.
He came and spoke at our school.
The actual guy?
He went around doing a circuit about the staying off drugs back then and stuff. Yeah. About his life, what he went through.
Yeah.
And he even ended up in our yearbook. They put a section of it in our yearbook about it. That was 1980 when I graduated.
Yeah. And the real life Toma that the show was based on.
Yeah. Yeah. The real guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to school, Tony?
Downstate,
Illinois. Okay. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Very, very cool. All right. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Lancelot Link, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Apparently, the name of the band was an all chimp band.
Yeah.
The Evolution Revolution.
That's it.
What the hell?
Yeah. Oh, no. That's the real deal, man.
the ape agency to prevent evil.
Right. Exactly right.
And Chump
was the bad guys.
Criminal headquarters for the underworld's master plan.
That's right. Let me also tell you this. That show, when I was a kid, I watched it all the time when I was a kid. But it had a resurgence in popularity because when Nickelodeon would do like late night stuff, you know, they would show Double Dare and stuff. And I've told you this before, that we would go down to Champaign. I'd go visit my friends in Champaign, and we'd get drunk.
Play a little Double Dare.
And then watch Double Dare all night at like 2 o'clock in the morning. But that was also followed by Lancelot Link. They started showing reruns of Lancelot Link.
My God.
Because they knew that their audience was either drunk or high college students. And they were like, okay, if our audience is a bunch of college students who are blowing weed or drinking booze, we need to put Lancelot Link on.
It's going to blow their minds.
And it was very, very popular. Very, very popular. But the thing is, you know, at that time, this was in the 80s. This was like 86, 87, something around that time. So at that time, when they were showing Lancelot Link reruns in the middle of the night, we were all of the age that had watched it already when we were kids. So it was like this. First of all, it was weird. It was hilarious to watch when you were drunk. And it was nostalgia because we watched that show, all of us, sitting in this crappy apartment in Champaign, where six guys would share one towel. It was the most disgusting. I remember I took a shower. Jeez. Oh, no, there were six guys living in one apartment. And there was an upstairs. There were like two bedrooms upstairs. Two guys shared that. Then it was like one bedroom downstairs, and some guy slept on the couch. There were six guys, and it was disgusting. It was disgusting. And I remember I took a shower, and I got out of the shower, and I touched touched the towel, and it was moist and just like it had been used. So I got a blow dryer and I blew dry myself because I didn't want to use the towel.
I'm really glad that people have evolved a little bit.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
these guys were slobs, man. They were college students. All they did was drink.
Yeah,
that's all they did. They lived off campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was an apartment building that was filled with college students. But it wasn't a dorm, so there were no like strict rules to be enforced.
Yeah, no RAs, man.
Yeah. No Knowles from Felicity. So they would do, it was insane. I remember one night we came back from, because you would drink on, have you ever been to Champaign? You ever been down to Champaign?
I have, just only a couple of times.
Because Green Street, that was the big street where all the bars were located. You would get loaded at the bars in Green Street. You would go to Steak and Shake because that was the only one. And then you'd go back and, you'd watch Lancelot Link till 5 o'clock in the morning. I remember one night we went out drinking, and we went back to this disgusting pig hole, and it was on the third floor of this apartment complex, and it had a balcony. It had like a small balcony, sliding glass window right by the front. And I remember somebody made, we got back and somebody was in the kitchen and we were drunk. And this, one of the guys was completely loaded and he was like, "Hey, man, I'm starving." So he made three boxes of Kraft macaroni and cheese, three in one gigantic pot. Like he put it all in one gigantic pot and he made like three full boxes of macaroni and cheese. He finishes making it. He's getting it, stirring it, getting ready. He's putting the butter, he's putting the milk, the powder, all the stuff, getting it all ready in that wonderful Kraft tasting macaroni and cheese. And one of his roommates grabbed the pot and threw it over the balcony. The whole pot. And it hit some next to some dude down on the first floor who was like smoking a cigarette or something. And he was down and it hit the sidewalk and this guy was covered with mac and cheese. Like it hit the sidewalk. The pot cracked. It was like one of the only pots they had in the kitchen. And this idiot, he just gets he takes it, walks out on the balcony, throws it right over the edge. There was like nothing else in the house to eat either. And it was like 3:30 in the morning and this guy was pissed. He was mad. He went to all that trouble to make the mac and cheese.
Oh my God.
And he was so hungry and he was waiting for the mac and cheese and then this other idiot just grabs it, throws it and covers some guy down on the sidewalk with mac and cheese.
I mean, that's the real kicker, is like, you know it's going to explode the minute
it
hits the ground.
Oh no, he went clang and then mac and cheese all over this dude who was none too pleased, I might add. So stupid. Okay. Getting back to the worst TV shows of the 70s, if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Got a few more of these to get to. Some of them we'll remember, some of them we won't. All of them are bad. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200.
Can't roller skate in a buffalo herd, but you can be happy if you've mind to. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. Take a shower in a parakeet cage, but you can be happy if you've mind.
Uh-huh.
All you gotta do.
Triple play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Who's that and who requested it?
So that's little Roger Miller. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd.
Right.
Real facts. And that's coming to us from the 724.
Area code. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here on WGN. So we're talking about some of the worst TV shows of the 70s, and let's see. Here is Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing? I got some weird stuff when we were kids. A couple cartoons. Clutch Cargo, Diver Dan, Speed Racer, and then a weird cop show, Get Christy Love.
Well, we talked about Get Christy Love. I love that show.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't understand it. I was pretty little at the time.
Well, but the other ones that you're talking about are just classic, are classic cartoons from our youth. And Clutch Cargo was distinctive because of the animation style,
right?
That they did when they used actual real lips, like human lips, to put onto the cardboard.
Yeah. Yeah, it was strange, but, you know, it was H.R. Puff and stuff, Sid Marty Krofft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah.
That all that.
If it was insane, it was Sid and Marty Krofft. That's pretty much, that's the general rule.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I love your show.
Thanks,
Nick.
Man. I appreciate that.
Yep.
You familiar with Clutch Cargo, Tom?
I'm watching a little bit right here, and this is some nightmare stuff.
Well, here's the interesting story about it, because it's very strange, because it's real lips, and the animation doesn't move. It's like still drawings, and the lips, real lips, are superimposed. But here's the interesting thing about it, and the story behind it, I think, is kind of fascinating, because I never knew the story until years later. But I watched it when I was a kid. It's also got one of the most memorable theme songs. In cartoon history. Clutch Cargo's, the theme song is fantastic. But I used to watch it all the time. And then years later, I found out that the creator of the show used that animation style because his son was deaf. And so he could read the lips.
Wow.
That's why he did it that way. And so for years, I was like, what the hell? This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And then years later, I'm like, oh.
That's actually really sweet.
It is. is, man. And aww. So, like, years later, you found out that his son was deaf or his daughter was deaf, either one of them. And so that's the animation style that he used so that his son could watch it or his daughter could watch it.
Good for you,
and understand, because the kid read lips, so he can understand it.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that was a great...
That's very sweet.
Because there's all these, you know, like, when you see it, you go, what the hell is that? Because the lips are weird, they're real, and like I said, it's not even animated. It's just still shots. You know, the characters don't even move. It's just, you know, pictures, like drawings with moving lips. So, Clutch Cargo, man. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. That's a great topic.
Thank you.
Got my mind spinning. You know, speaking of Clutch Cargo, there was another cartoon, same producers, I believe, and it was more short-lived, I think, than Clutch Cargo. It's called Space Angel.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do.
Yeah. That had better art. That was done by...
Yeah. Yeah. But Clutch Cargo was Clutch Cargo was really popular when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Really popular.
And Sid and Murray Croft, it was Lidsville, mentioned?
Lidsville with Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yeah.
Oh.
Spin off of Pet Puffin stuff, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff was crazy. It was just absolutely crazy. Completely.
I called up for like three specific shows. One, Lawrence Welk show.
Oh, sure.
That was as bad as it gets. And when you watch it now, if you can ever see it on YouTube or something like that as an adult, it watches like comedy, like, you know, because it's like squarer than square.
Yeah.
And I watched it as a little kid because there was nothing else really on Sunday afternoons. And it was, if you remember, it was sponsored by Haley's MO and Milk of Magnesia,
yep.
I believe.
Yep. Lawrence Welk and the Bubble Machine. Yep.
Yep. That's right. Another really bad one, short lived, was Apple's Way.
Oh.
Ronnie Cox.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And all you need to do is to, when you see that, it's just watch the opening theme with the credits. And you know, any show that opens with like a family, like having a picnic where they're passing the food around at the table, like Roseanne style.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they started that show. And, you know, it had every stereotype of a family you can imagine in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And then there was Ozzy's Girls, which is another short-lived comedy. Ted Knight, I believe, starred as a landlord of Ozzy and Harriet's daughters, I think, two of them, or something like that. And they were, like, renting an apartment above him. Again, very, very short-lived.
Yeah, I don't remember that one at all.
Pretty bad.
But I remember the other ones. All right, Rich, thanks.
You bet. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
How about High Cliff Manor. Considered one of the worst TV shows of the 70s. This gothic horror sitcom takes obvious inspiration from dark shadows of the late 60s and early 70s. It wasn't a roaring success like its inspiration, however, and it only aired 6 30-minute episodes. Inspired by dark shadows.
That's something you don't want to have in your description.
Inspired by dark shadows?
Yeah. I was not a fan of dark shadows.
When I was a kid... When I was a little kid, I loved Dark Shadows. I loved it because there was vampires and
sure.
There was werewolves and witches in it and stuff. And I, you know, obsessed with the monsters. And I remember as a little kid, my mom tells me this story. I would stand behind the couch because it was a soap opera. It was on during the day. It was on ABC during the day. So my mom would watch it. And I remember my mom telling me that I would stand behind the couch and peek my head out while it was on because I'd be freaking out. I'd be scared. And then she'd be like, I'll turn it off if you want me to turn it off. I'd be like, no, leave it on. And then I'd go back behind the couch again and just peek my head up. And they made two movies. They made House of Dark Shadows and I can't remember the title of the other one. But one of them traumatized me when I was a kid.
Really?
Traumatized me. We were at the Chicago Theater downtown. I think it was House of Dark Shadows. Because at one point in the movie, Barnabas Collins, Jonathan Frid, who played Barnabas Collins, the vampire, ages rapidly and like turns into a really, really, really old, creepy, bald dude. And when I was a kid, it scared the hell out of me, like to the point where I had to go out to the lobby. Like my dad had to take me out to the lobby because it scared me so bad. And I want to say I was like 5 or 6 when I saw it. And so I remember being really terrified of it. Okay. And then you know, years later, I can't remember what network was showing it, but they went back and started showing Dark Shadows on a regular basis, and that show sucked. I loved it when I was a kid, but oh my God, was it bad. Like, the acting was awful. They would knock stuff over on the set and just leave it in. That's how bad it was. And then they showed House of Dark Shadows, and I was like, oh, I got to watch this. And then to see, and when he turns into an old man, it's laughable. It's laughable and so stupid. But it scared the hell out of me when I was five. Yeah. So
the strangest things.
Highcliffe Manor. It's no Dark Shadows. All right. Let's break here, and we've got the news coming up after this, and then more bad TV shows from the 70s. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Well, here I sit high getting ideas. Ain't nothing but a fool to live like this. Out all night and running wild. Warm sitting home with a month-old child. Dang me. Dang me. They ought to take a rope and hang me.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. That's Roger Miller, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three song, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Having some fun here talking about some really terrible TV shows from the 70s. Remembering that was a decade that was filled with pretty crappy shows. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Nick. Perhaps the worst show of the 70s is Quark. It was a spoof of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And even though I liked Richard Benjamin, it was just a horrible show to watch.
Yeah, it was a terrible show. I remember watching it. And again, I'm also a big fan of Richard Benjamin, but that was really bad.
And I didn't care for Battlestar Galactica. I couldn't get over Ben Cartwright being in charge of the ship.
Yeah. Yeah, Battlestar Galactica was popular because of, you know, anything that was in space after Star Wars, you know, immediately, you know, everything was a Star Wars ripoff, and that was one of them.
And this other one may be because my mom made us watch. Buck Rogers just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, Buck Rogers, Gil Gerard.
Yes,
Gil Gerard. What's her name was in it, and that's the only reason I watched it. God, who was it? Was it Connie Selica?
I don't recall.
In Buck Rogers?
Because was it Pamela Hensley?
No.
No?
I would recognize the name in Buck Rogers in the 21st Century.
Gil Gerard, Aaron Gray.
Aaron Gray, that's
there
it.
We go.
Aaron Gray.
Yeah. That was the only reason I watched it, because of Aaron Gray.
And then they went to all detective shows. Barnaby Jones was horrible. Cannon was horrible.
All of those, it's funny though, Jeff, because all of those shows were very successful. Barnaby Jones and Cannon were both huge successes.
Even though I was young, I like to think that you should be able to follow the show and how an old guy could shoot the gun out of a guy's hand at 80 yards with a Saturday Night Special.
Yeah.
And then the bad guy stood there and waited for him to catch up to him.
Yeah, well, those are kind of regular cop show cliches, Jeff. You find those in all of the shows that are on now as well. So, Jeff, thanks for the call. Quark, Richard Benjamin. Thanks, Jeff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Bob on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Not bad. I got a couple of them for you.
Yeah.
BJ and the Bear.
We talked about BJ and the Bear earlier, and the fact that it's a monkey, not a bear, and the monkey is named Bear for some reason.
Right. And Grizzly Adams.
Ah, yes, Dan Haggerty.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that one actually had a bear.
that one did have a bear. Yeah. BJ and the Bear didn't have a bear; it had a monkey, but Grizzly Adams did have a bear. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right.
Take care. If you were hoping to find a bear in BJ and the Bear, you would have been disappointed, but there's a bear in Grizzly Adams. That was another popular show. Some of these shows were terrible, but they were popular. Like, Grizzly Adams was a really popular show. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, how about Love American Style? Yeah, Love American Style, I believe, started in the 60s. I think it was a late 60s show, but it did run throughout the early 70s. And then there were spinoffs from Love American Style. Happy Days is a spinoff of Love American Style. 773 area code says, how about the White Shadow? I used to love the White Shadow. Ken Howard? I loved that show. Hey, Nick, I'm not sure, but Pink Lady and Jeff. I'm not sure what the year, but Pink Lady and Jeff, this was just an insane. Do you know Pink Lady and Jeff?
I do not.
All right. There's another one of these fantastic decisions by the suits in charge. Jeff Altman was a stand-up comedian, still is a stand-up comedian, of unusual. His act was very unusual. He was a favorite of David Letterman's. And he was on Letterman all the time. And I thought Jeff Altman was hilarious. I thought he was, but he was weird. His comedy was very, very weird. Not the kind of guy who should host a variety show. And especially not the kind of guy who should host a variety show. And his partners were Pink Lady. They were two Japanese pop singers who couldn't speak English and could only speak phonetically. So these are so they put Pink Lady together because they were very popular in Japan. But nobody knew who they were here. So they put them together, and it was Pink Lady and Jeff. And it was a disastrous show. Like a disaster. One of the worst TV shows of all time. At a time when every knucklehead on the planet had a bad variety show. There was a period of time in the 70s and into the early 80s where they gave variety shows to anybody. So yeah, Pink Lady and Jeff, that was a disaster. If you can find it, the episode where the guest star was Jerry Lewis has got to be seen to be believed. Jerry Lewis was not known for his sensitivity to Asian stereotypes. And he went full on this show. But yeah, so Pink Lady and Jeff, that was just an unmitigated disaster and a horrible idea from the absolute get-go. Oh, man. All right, here's a couple more. Holmes and Yo-Yo. This is one of my favorite bad shows of all time. Holmes and Yo-Yo. It followed a cop and his android partner. Holmes and Yo-Yo is listed by TV Guide as one of the worst shows ever made, and then Future Cop, Man and Machine, and Almost Human all followed a similar setup to the same success or lack thereof. So we had a robot partner, and it was Richard Shuck. John Shuck and Richard. I can't remember who the other cop was, but I remember when it came on, it is truly one of the worst shows of all time. Holmes and Yo-Yo. Obviously, Yo-Yo was the robot. I don't know. Yeah, that's another one you should check out footage for, Tom, is Holmes and Yo-Yo.
Holmes?
Holmes and Yo-Yo. Oh, about a cop and his robot partner, played by John Shuck.
I've been trying to find a little bit of this Pink Lady and Jeff because honestly I'm intrigued.
Oh my god, man!
Right now he is full tuxedo.
Oh yeah,
in a hot tub, surrounded by women in bikinis.
Yeah,
and was this a family show?
It was a variety show. They did musical numbers and comedy sketches, and the girls could barely speak English.
Oh man,
it was.
This is ridiculous.
It was completely insane. And again, if you find the Jerry Lewis stuff,
I'll see if I can.
And you can't play it on the air.
Oh no. Oh no.
Because there's just like
Well, I mean, this honestly looks like you could tell me this is like the Playboy Mansion right now. It's a little
it was just so ridiculous. And nobody knew who Jeff Altman was. Jeff Altman was like a cult comedian at that time, and this was maybe when he started, guesting on Letterman, because like I said, he was an absolute regular on Letterman because Letterman loves Jeff Altman.
Yeah, he loves
Jeff Altman.
He was on Late Night with David Letterman and The Late Show with David Letterman a combined 45 times.
Absolutely,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and he's funny as hell. Jeff Altman is funny. You know, Cochran knows him. Cochran knows Jeff Altman. I think Cochran's had him on his show a bunch of times.
Jeez. Interesting fella.
Yeah. You know, Cochran and I talked about Pink Lady and Jeff one morning. I did some crosstalk. When he used to start at 5, I would go down and hang out for a couple of segments. So I went down there, and we were talking about Pink Lady and Jeff, and it came up, and I mentioned it, and Andrea and I think Mary and a couple of other people immediately thought we were talking about Grease.
Oh.
They were like, oh, Grease. I love Grease. And Cochran and I just looked at each other, and he had that knowing look in our eyes, because we knew the Pink Lady that we were referring to, and it was the Japanese duo that was teamed up with Jeff Altman for one of the most notorious variety shows of all time.
Why was the variety show format so popular?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, you know, the thing is, they were very popular in the 60s and the 70s.
Right.
And, I mean, like, Carol Burnett was one of the highest rated shows on TV, and everybody wanted another Carol Burnett, so they started giving people variety shows. The Starlight Vocal Band, who did Afternoon Delight, they got one. And David Letterman appeared on it. It was a writer on it.
Huh.
And they would know that Smothers Brothers had a very, you know, there were.
Well, I mean, the Smothers Brothers are.
Yeah, but
the
I mean.
Smothers
but,
Brothers.
But I know, but like, they, but that was the thing. It was like, I think if we can, you know, we can tap into something here with by giving anybody and everybody. The Brady Bunch had a variety show, which is one of the worst things that's ever been on TV. Shields and Yarnell. They were mimes. They gave mimes a variety show.
Where do you stand on Captain and Tennille?
Well, they had a show, too. Captain and Tennille had a variety show, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan. I mean, I like Tony Tennille's work on Pink Floyd The Wall. That's pretty great. But I'll tell you something, man, you know, if you were around in like 1975 or 76, when that damn Love Will Keep Us Together was on the radio, you'd have killed somebody.
jumped out of my car.
I jumped out a window. It was that song. First of all, it was annoying. And then second of all, every 5 minutes it was on the radio. And I mean, seriously, it was the heavy, 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 ridiculous, heavy rotation all the time.
WJNO.
Yeah.
God. Here's another.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they have variety show. I mean, it was ridiculous, you know? When you start giving variety shows to mimes and people who can't speak English, I think it might be time to stop.
Mimes.
One of the things that, I'm not kidding. Shields and Yarnell were mimes.
I'm guessing the opening monologue wasn't too good.
I think they were married. I think they were a couple. Maybe they were married. I'm not sure. But whenever they did bits, it was mime bits. I mean, they talked. They obviously had to talk to introduce their guests.
Okay.
And do comedy bits. You know, but whenever they did their act, when it was just the two of them on stage, it was a mime act.
I think they would have been braver if they just did the whole thing silent.
If you're going to do it, do it.
Come on.
As George Michael says, if you're going to do it right. All right, let's take a break here for some weather, and then we'll wrap up the worst TV shows of the 70s conversation, and then we're gonna bust out some summertime treats that we'd like to bring back. Some old summertime treats making a comeback that we would like to see make a comeback. All right, here's your weather forecast for today. Partly sunny, afternoon highs in the low to mid 70s inland, but 60 degrees closer to the lake. Partly cloudy overnight. Tomorrow, temperatures rise to about 80 degrees. It'll be cooler on the North Shore. Showers, thunderstorms possible late afternoon and likely overnight. Then for Saturday, showers, thunderstorms likely in the morning, and then partly cloudy and breezy. Highs in the lower 80s. For Sunday, partly sunny skies will boost temperatures to the mid-80s. Scattered thunderstorms are possible, especially late and at night. For Monday, a cold front makes its way through the area, bringing clouds and a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It'll be kind of humid with a low in the mid-80s. A high in the low to mid-80s. It's currently 57 degrees at O'Hare. It's 57 at Midway and 54 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back, wrap up the bad TV show conversation, and then we will, after the news, we will jump into the 8 summertime treats we would like to see come back.
Man of means, by no means, king of the road, third boxcar, midnight train, day. Banger, man.
right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. Yeah, and we've been talking about terrible TV shows from the 70s. And we got a few more that we're going to talk about. Here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
So it's either called Code R or Code Red, and it had Lauren Green post Bonanza. I think it was like before Battlestar Galactica.
Uh-huh.
And Adam Rich, and it was like Adam Rich post Eight Is Enough. You know, it was like his thing. And I want to say I kind of remember now that Mark Harmon was in this, and it was Lauren Green was like the fire chief. It didn't last very long. And
yeah.
And Adam Rich was his son, and it just was, I don't know, it was just really awful and cheesy, and Adam
I vaguely,
trying to, like, be more independent, and, you know, he was doing stupid stuff, and Lauren Green had to, like, put the hammer down, and, oh, it was awful.
I vaguely remember it, very vaguely, so.
Yeah, I don't know why, my uncle directed it, and So it was a short-lived show, but, you know, it just was one of those things, like, you don't even find that on his IMDb listing.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Jill. Thanks.
Sure. Bye.
All right. Take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about terrible TV shows from the 70s. Here's one that I remember. In the Beginning. With McLean Stevenson. Though it was created by famed producer Norman Lear of All in the Family and Jefferson's fame, this series of a conservative priest and a liberal nun running a mission together only aired 5 of its 9 produced episodes. Tom, can you look that one up? In the Beginning, I want to know who the co-star is, because I know McLean Stevenson was in it. I just want to know who played the nun in The Beginning. McLean Stevenson, after he left MASH, it did a series of shows that just stunk. But he was a funny, funny guy, McLean Stevenson. Very talented and very funny. But he did like 3-4 series after he left MASH that were just awful.
So this is created by Norman Lear,
right?
Correct? All right, let's see here. Olivia Barash.
I have no idea who that is.
It was McLean Stevenson, right? Was his You're father right. Daniel M. Cleary?
Yeah.
Jack Dodson, Priscilla Lopez, and Priscilla Morrill. Ringing any bells?
No. I remember the show though, because it caused quite a stir. I remember it was pretty controversial. How about Lanigan's Rabbi? Part of the NBC Sunday Night Mystery Movie series, Lanigan's Rabbi was a series of 90-minute television films about a rabbi who helped police solve crimes. Only four ever aired. Is that Art Carney?
What was the title of the show again?
Lanigan's Rabbi. Lanigans. Lanigan's Rabbi. I'm looking at a picture, and that might be Art Carney.
It definitely is Art
Carney. Oh, my God.
Art Carney, Janice Page. Janet Margolin.
Art Carney, man.
I just got to go with a rabbi, man.
Wow. All right.
I wish I had a rabbi that helped me solve crimes.
Sure, man. Especially if it was Art Carney.
Who's this? Oh, it's my crime-solving rabbi.
Wow. Art Carney's one of my heroes. He and Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners. I mean, it does not get better.
What about him as Irv Manders in Firestarter?
I liked Firestarter.
I do like Firestarter.
I think George C. Scott's phenomenal in that movie. So, about this, 815 area code says Muskrat Love was worse. Yes, Muskrat Love was a terrible song. I'm talking about Captain and Tennille. Muskrat Love was terrible, but it didn't get played as much as Love Will Keep Us Together.
No, that's ubiquitous.
I mean, it's crap. I'm not denying that it's terrible, but I mean, It was a popular song, but it wasn't nearly as popular or as annoying as that other one. 847 area code says the Hudson Brothers. Oh, the wacky Hudson Brothers. The old Hudson Brothers. So that was a variety show with the Hudson Brothers.
And were they people of note?
Well, or? one of them is Kate Hudson's father. Was married to Goldie Hawn. And I can't remember which one. Because there's three Hudson Brothers. There was, like, I know there was Mark and, I don't know, Curly and Larry. I don't know. But the Hudson Brothers used to be on after Saturday Night Live. Like, their show would be on late, like, after SCTV. Because it would be SNL, and when SCTV was only a half an hour long before it went to NBC as a network show, it was syndicated, it was only a half an hour long. It would be that, followed by SCTV at midnight, and the 12:30 would be Hudson Brothers.
Wow, and they worked with Bernie Taupin.
They worked with everybody. They were really popular.
Yeah.
Really popular. 773 area code says, I'm not sure if they were in the 70s, but Mothers-in-Law and the Pink Petticoat. Uh-huh. All right. And then finally, we close with the Brady Bunch Hour, which we mentioned variety show. TV Guide consistently ranks the Brady Bunch Hour as one of the top five worst TV shows of all time. Though the pilot was a rating success, the show within a show storyline was a flop, and later episodes were produced sporadically. There were only 9 in total. Widely considered one of the worst TV shows of all time. So, there you go. Some bad TV in the 70s. And some bad pants and hair. So, all right. We'll take a break here, and the news is up next.
Never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curve, yeah. Flattening the hills. Someday the mountain.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Triple play Thursday. Here continues. There you go. So, welcome back, everybody. And despite the fact that, I mean, we're going to get some summertime temperatures in a few days. And despite the fact that it's been raining for 5 years, approximately, it is summertime, and we want to talk about some summertime treats that we should bring back. By the way, who made that request for,
The Dukes of Hazzard?
Yeah.
That was, coming to us from Richard.
From Richard, okay.
I want to hear a little Waylon Jennings.
All right. There you go. So, this is from Mental Floss, and it says, certain snacks are synonymous with summer. A waffle cone piled high with creamy ice cream. A sizzling hot dog fresh off the grill. A tall, cool glass of water buffalo milk. Okay, maybe not the last one has gotten as much play in our lifetimes. But in the centuries before refrigeration came about, anyone baking in the summer sun had to get creative. While many historic summertime treats have stuck around in one form or another, others, like the ones we've gathered here, have mostly melted away like a dropped popsicle on a sidewalk in August. A tall, cool glass of water buffalo milk.
An ancient remedy, I suppose.
Yeah. And I'm a milk drinker. I drink a lot of milk. But every time I think, like, summertime and milk, I think of Anchorman. Milk was a bad choice.
It's so hot.
Milk was a bad choice. All right, here we go. Flavored snow and ice. The snow cones of eras past were a lot more literal than the neon kind we slurp at the carnivals these days. In ancient Rome, slaves scoured nearby mountains for blocks of ice, which were then crushed and topped with spiced syrups and fruit for their masters. Mesopotamian nobles, two had ice houses built along the banks of the Euphrates River to beat the heat. Snow was even sold in the streets of ancient Athens, likely to cool wine. Flavored ices have remained popular through the world. Thomas Jefferson was known to serve freezies at Monticello. even as they've largely moved away from the straight-up snow-based variety. So popular, in fact, in 1905, 11-year-old Frank Epperson knew he was onto something when he accidentally left a glass of water, powdered soda mix, and a wooden stick on the porch overnight, and the concoction froze, and the popsicle was born. That's how the popsicle was born. Wow. I did not know that. Do you enjoy the flavored, ice?
Not really all that much, but when I graduated from high school, we had a snow cone machine at the party. I wasn't really like chomping at the bit for it, but my mom thought it would be a fun thing for my younger cousins.
If you're making your own snow cone, though, you could pour like a half a gallon of the flavoring on it if you want. That's the thing. Like if you're getting a snow cone, like at a cart or a stand or something like that, you know, a lot of people don't think they put enough of the syrup on it.
No. Sometimes it tastes like, you know, you get a strawberry snow cone. It tastes like strawberry, but if it were in the other room, like just a wisp of the strawberry.
You want to soak that ice.
Oh, yeah.
Like completely. Till the crap's dripping over the side.
That's why I, you know, give them an extra tip. If I'm getting a snow cone, give them like, oh, yeah, here's an extra couple bucks. Really lay it on thick.
Yeah. Well, it's been around forever. How about this? Flower Pot Sundays. Lady Bird Johnson, a dedicated environmentalist, had White House chef Henry Holler serve flower pot sundaes at her daughter's engagement parties in the 60s. The seasonal suite consisted of layers of ice cream, meringue, and sponge cake served in clay flower pots and topped with fresh blossoms. The perfect combination of the First Lady's wildflower beautification measures and dessert duties. With her love of gardening, we're a little surprised Michelle Obama didn't bring back that tradition to Pennsylvania Avenue during her time as First Lady, though an entire flower pot full of sugar wouldn't pass her healthy eating initiatives. That just sounds weird to me. I don't know. I'm not a real big, I'm not a real big sweet tooth guy.
No.
If I'm going to snack on something, you know, that's not healthy, it's of the salty variety,
chips, pretzels.
That kind of stuff.
My brother's got real bad sweet tooth. He's pretty much clean living, like, he's like vegan, exercises every single day. But if we ever make brownies or something, they'll be gone in hours. He'll eat all of them. He goes crazy.
But like vegan brownies?
No, full on regular brownies. It's the one cheat he does.
Oh. Wow. That's pretty crazy. All right, how about this? Kool-Aid. We all drank Kool-Aid when we were growing up. Everybody drank Kool-Aid when we were growing up. The sugary summer drink dates back far further than the plastic jugs parents in the 80s and 90s had waiting for their kids' soccer games. A Nebraska businessman and amateur chemist added the powdered product to his existing lineup of goods like nicotine to help tobacco dependency and Motor Vigor, which was a gasoline additive in the late 20s. Originally called Fruit Smack. I like that. What are some of the other? Because what are some of the other knockoffs of Kool-Aid? Because there's Weiler's, right? Weiler's, is that still around?
I don't know if it's still around, but I think
Weiler's was it. Weiler's was it? No, I know Weiler's for sure was a. Hey, by the way, did you know that they're bringing the Sponge Monkeys of Quiznos back? Which is the greatest commercial ad campaign of all time?
Better than the Filet-O-Fish.
Well, no, but I love the Sponge Monkeys.
They freaked me out.
Oh, I loved them.
I don't know how I felt about that.
I loved them.
I remember as a kid, there was Mondo Juice, Mondo Squeezers.
Uh-huh. Mondo Juice? That just sounds unhealthy.
Sounds like the first draft pick.
Mondo Juice?
Now for the Cleveland Browns, Mondo Juice.
Yeah. But there were more of these, the knockoff Kool-Aid stuff. But it was originally in the 20s, it was called Fruit Smack. It came in six flavors: raspberry, grape, lemon, orange, cherry, and root beer. And debuted right around the time Coca-Cola was catching on nationally. Business was good, but things really took off when the Great Depression hit and consumers realized that they could stretch one little packet into a pitcher to cool down the whole family. Kool-Aid's still around, though, despite the 1970s association with the Jonestown mass suicide, though the evidence indicates that they actually mostly drank Kool-Aid competitor Flavor-Aid. There's one. There it is, Flavor-Aid. That's one of the other ones. The knockoff of Kool-Aid, Flavor-Aid. And today's health-conscious parents, but that smiling pitcher with limbs doesn't seem to hold the same wall-breaking power that he once did. He can still bust over. He still comes in. He still busts through walls and stuff. Kool-Aid man. Fruit smack. About iced water buffalo milk. This was mentioned in the intro to this piece. There's some debate as to where ice cream officially originated, with various people with varying amounts of accuracy and evidence ascribing it to Marco Polo, and even attributes to King Solomon and Alexander the Great. China's Tang Dynasty has a pretty solid claim on that feat, though. Emperors from that time were known to have enjoyed a frozen milk-like treat made from buffalo, goat, or cow's milk heated with flour and spiced camphor. Refreshing. Yeah, that sounds delightful.
Now, do you have to have your own water buffalo, I'm guessing?
Yeah. You're not going to find water buffalo milk at the Jewels.
Are you sure? Can we call your dad and check?
Yeah. Dad, what aisle is the water buffalo milk in? None. Aisle none is where it is.
Or maybe they just got a water buffalo out back. Yeah, you just got to hit and go to the water buffalo out back.
Iced water buffalo milk. I'd try it. I enjoy milk very much. So. I drink a lot of it, man.
Do you have a preferred brand?
I just get the Jewels.
Get the Jewel brand?
Yeah, usually. Because it's usually $1.99 for a gallon. I go through a gallon in about 5 days.
Yeah.
And it's got to be the whole milk, not the dishwater stuff.
Really?
No.
Not even 2%?
No. That's dishwater. It's got to be whole milk.
Oh, man. They got me on the dishwater milk when I was a kid.
No.
Because they were like, oh, you shop in the Husky section of JCPenney, don't you, boy?
I can't. No, I can't do it. And skim milk's not even, that doesn't even qualify. That's more, even more dishy water. Skim milk? No. That's not milk.
It was for my health, Nick. They made me do it.
Skim and 2%? Get out of here. Get that stuff out of here. Nice, whole milk.
I wish I could live in your world.
Well.
The world of whole milk.
I love it, man. I'll drink, if I'm someplace and I'm, I think my parents buy, when they buy milk, I think they buy 2%. So if I'm at my folks' house and I'm having a glass of milk, I'll do the 2%, and I don't like it, but it's got to be the whole milk. I'm not kidding. I drink milk except if I'm in a restaurant. I drink milk with every meal I have, every single meal, even if it's like a pizza, I will have a glass of milk. So, and it's got to be the whole milk. I'm not playing around.
Well, I mean, when's the last time you broke a bone? Works.
My teeth are still in my mouth too.
Yeah, bingo.
So, all right. Hey, let's take a break, and then we'll talk more about some of these summertime treats that we would like to see come back and some of the history behind them. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
I'm proud of all the things that I've done. But I can say I've never intentionally hurt anyone.
All right, wrapping up a Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, maybe right here on WGN, 312-981-7200. We are talking about summertime treats and the history of them and which ones should come back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And also coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. And talking about some summertime treats and the history of them right here on WGN. And here is Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Morning.
Yeah, offshoot of Kool-Aid was Funny Face.
Funny Face. Okay.
They had Goofy Grape and some other flavors.
Goofy Grape, of course.
And they had the mugs that you could buy that, you know, went with the flavors that you bought.
Yeah.
Little plastic mugs.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I remember that now. I knew that there were more than just those, because, you know, we had Flavor Aid and there was Weiler's. Weiler's was more lemonade, though, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Weiler's was more lemonade. But yeah, Funny Face, the Kool-Aid knockoff. All right. All right, Michael, thanks, man.
Hey, treats they should bring back, by the original Big Bomb Pop.
Oh, sure.
And the Flavor Ice.
And Flavor Ice. Oh, yeah. But that's not around anymore? Flavor Ice isn't around?
Yeah, it's not around as much as that. I mean, they used to have the real big ones, but they only sell, like, these 8-inchers now. They used to, like, have a 12-incher, 14-inch ones.
Yeah. All right. All right, oh, Michael, thanks. Thanks, buddy.
All right, bad show, Empty Nest.
Okay. Take care, Michael. By the way, I think Michael just made Straight Out of Context for tomorrow.
Yeah, dude. 12 inches.
I think he just did.
Flavor Ice is definitely still around.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if you get... I don't know if it's still brand... I used to get Jewel Kind. They used to make just... Or like, I don't know, some kind of generic...
Oh, yeah. No, there's generic versions of all this stuff that we're talking about.
I used to love the Flavor Ice, man.
Yeah, I just didn't like the... You know, I was not crazy about it being surrounded by plastic.
Yeah. Well, it just made it harder to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I don't know. 847 area code says, apparently water buffaloes are bred all over the world for their milk because it's more digestible and it's twice as rich. Cherry, you just got to throw it in the fridge and accomplish the virgin you spoke of. I don't know what any of that means.
What?
To keep a gallon in the fridge and just chug right out of it. I live alone, last about a day or two, if I'm lucky. Okay. 815 area code says Mondo was for the richer families. Us poor folk had a case of flavored juice grenades from Aldo. Those little plastic containers of juice that have like the foil around the lip of the bottle. They would come in cases. You can get the cases for like $2 or something. They were terrible. They tasted terrible, but they were really, really cheap. It was really, really cheap, and they would come in, you know, the cardboard case, and there'd be different flavors, and they would have, like, a foil top on it, and the bottles would be, like, made of a sort of tinted plastic. All right, how about ice cream carts? An ice cream vendor in New York hands a young girl an ice cream cone circa 1920. That's a video. That's a picture. Before the tinny melody of Pop Goes the Weasel brought swarms of sweaty kids to the streets for a chip, which mobile ice cream vendors used to be more primitive and less sanitary. In the late 19th century, vendors sold dishes of ice cream from carts cooled with ice blocks, which meant customers would lick their dish clean and then return it to the seller to use for the next customer. Oh, my God. Not exactly the model of hygiene. Before widespread milk pasteurization, ice cream also came topped with a threat of bacteria that could cause scarlet fever, tuberculosis, or other extreme ailments. The frozen treat became safer to order after studies of typhoid in New York implicated raw milk, causing most cities to require pasteurization, and inventions like ice cream, the ice cream cone, made the sharing dishes disappear. Technological advances around the same time made refrigeration easier, and scoopers traded in their carts for cars. Ice cream trucks first appeared in the 1920s and have seen something of a resurgence in recent years as other food trucks have flourished and anything vintage has become hipster cool. We used to have, when my ex and I lived in Albany Park, we were certain that this ice cream truck was up to no good, because it would be like 11:30 at night, 11:45, and we would hear it driving down the street. And we were convinced like they were selling cocaine out of the truck or something, because who drives an ice cream truck down the street at 11:30 at night on a Tuesday?
That's kind of creepy.
It was very creepy.
Like, all of a sudden, it's 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You hear kids.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. They did it on a regular basis. It was like, yeah. Albany Park's a weird place, man.
I almost lived in Albany Park for a period of time.
I lived there for 3 years. It's a weird place. Easy cheese. Yes, Gwyneth Paltrow famously said she'd prefer crack to cheese from a can. But for the rest of us, spray cheese remains the stuff of nostalgic summer road trip memories. Easy cheese first propelled its way into America's hearts and arteries in 1966. By the way, I mentioned this a lot. I mentioned this before. The Blues Brothers get it wrong. When they return to the hotel after Jake gets out of prison, and they return to the hotel, there's a guy sitting in the lobby where they live. The guy sitting in the lobby and he goes, "Where's my cheese whiz, boy?" to Dan Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd throws him a can of Easy Cheese. That's not cheese whiz. Cheese whiz is in a jar. Cheese whiz is the stuff that's spreadable and it's in a jar.
Really?
Yeah, that's cheese whiz.
I always thought they were
easy
the same
cheese.
Thing.
Easy cheese is in the can. Easy cheese is what you.
Okay.
See. That's easy cheese. It's not cheese whiz, and they get it wrong in the Blues Brothers. You got my cheese whiz, boy. Then he throws him a can of easy cheese. That's not cheese whiz.
All right.
So, how about shoulder clod? That sounds appetizing. Once a standard cut for American barbecue, shoulder clod rarely makes modern appearances in America's grilling pits anymore. Southern meat markets used to buy entire four quarters of beef, divide out the roast, smoke whatever was left over. But in the 60s, wholesalers started shipping individual vacuum-sealed cuts, making the fattier brisket the barbecue favorite. Unfortunately, named clod is a leaner piece of meat with beefier flavor that comes from the cow's shoulder. And it was all but forgotten. But if you can find a chunk of clod at your local butcher shop, know that it will cook faster because of its leanness. It's a shoulder. Why are you calling it a clod?
Well, yeah, it's not pork clod. Yeah, shoulder. Pork shoulder.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there you go. Fun show tomorrow. Very excited. Not only will we have our regular features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday, but our good friend Jeff Tuckman is going to be here live in studio, and he will answer all of your questions about DVDs, Blu-rays, and if you can't remember the name of a movie, we'll help you out, describe it to us, tell us who's in it, and we'll do that for you. That's Jeff. And we're also giving away the entire series of Married with Children. So an 11-disc set.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah. That's what we're giving away. And then after 2 o'clock, the lovely Esmeralda Leon is going to join us for a nice long visit. She's going to hang out with us from 2 to the end of the show at 5. And we'll do some of the regular quizzes that we do with Esmeralda. And she's going to stick around for all the regular Friday features. And she'll vote on You Big Dummy and all that cool. And we'll catch up with Esmeralda. So I'm very excited about that. It's going to be a fun show tomorrow. Jeff Tuckman and Esmeralda Leon tomorrow on our Friday show.